Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Game Junk Podcast for May 2013. This is episode number 15, and my name is Sean.
My name is Frank.
My name is Andrew.
Coming up on this episode, we're going to be talking about the Xbox One reveal. We're also going to be talking about some GDC and PAX stuff, a little bit of news, lots of games we played, no main reviews, and we're also going to count down our top five game consoles of all time. So thanks for tuning in and, you know, sticking with a podcast that happens once every 6 months or so. exciting news, we have a very special guest to welcome to the show this time around. Our good friend Graham Smith from Drinkbox Studios, co-founder of Drinkbox Studios and producer on the recently released Guacamelee.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks a lot.
So, you know, disclaimer up front, we've worked with you, we're friends with you, we know you, and, you know, it's just good to have you on the show, but let's talk Guacamelee for a minute.
All right.
It's out for PS3 and Vita.
Yeah, it came out last month, beginning of April, and yeah, it's doing pretty good. Yeah, we're getting a lot of positive reception from critics and from fans.
Fantastic reviews out there.
Yeah, definitely.
Has there been any bad reviews? I haven't seen any.
There's been reviews that were less good, but not really any bad reviews. Some people are picking on certain things about the game, but generally pretty good overall. Yeah, we're really happy.
So it's also part of the cross-play thing. So if you buy it for the PS3, you also can get it for the Vita. If you buy it for the Vita, you also can get it for the PS3.
Yeah, that's right. And and we have cloud save as well, so that if you have both consoles, you can bring your save game across and pick up where you left off on the other one. Yeah.
Cool.
I took advantage of that feature.
As did I.
Now, will it be coming out for any other platforms, or can we not talk about anything like that as of yet?
We're working with Sony on through this program called the PubFund program, which gives them like an exclusivity period for the game.
Right.
But after that ends, it's possible that it might come out on other platforms. But we haven't announced anything yet. So.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So I guess question: are we going to talk about Guacamelee on the show?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yeah? All right. It's going to get intense.
I hope you can handle
it. Bring it on.
Two on two.
Nice. So we got a few other things we wanted to plug just off the top of the show. One thing we wanted to mention, some very good friends of ours are doing a Kickstarter for a little game you may have heard of called Shadow of the Eternals.
Including the CEO, Paul Capricci, who was a guest on Game Junk previously.
Yes, I believe it was the episode where we talked about
Halo Reach
and Rock Band 3.
Maybe, yeah.
That sounds right.
I know Halo Reach for sure.
Yeah. So that was a while ago. But yeah, so spiritual successor to Eternal Darkness. I'm sure you've heard of it, but they're good people and they're trying to make a good game. So check it out and, you know, consider giving them a little money and you probably get a great game out of it. Frank, you got something you want to plug?
Well, just a little information. Nothing out there yet. I've been working on a small game for Steam called Lost Orbit with some guys at Pixelnauts. Very limited capacity, but there's a Facebook page and a Twitter. Feel free to check it out. I'll provide links for the show notes, and we'll have updates coming as progress continues.
Are you going to be doing a dev blog journal, daily dev blog journal?
I will not be.
That's too bad.
My participation is weekly, so it'd be tough to do a daily dev blog.
Okay, fair enough. Andrew?
Yeah, so I talked a bit about it last show, I believe, but we're still working on Citizens of Earth. We had a demo out there at GDC, really well received. We also have a Facebook page, facebook.com/Citizens of Earth Game. And yeah, check it out. It's going real well. Everything's progressing in the game, and looking forward to showing off the demo to more people. There's some YouTube videos out there of a couple people playing it and a few impressions up, so check those out.
Are there any Let's Play videos out there?
There are, actually. There's two of the first playthrough of our demo. Unfortunately, in both the demos, they hit a little snag, which we had not found before. So we're talking to those guys. We're going to get them a better build that they can play through. But
nice.
Yeah, a little embarrassing, but the game still shows really well, even though they hit a little bug here and there.
Happens to the best of us. Trust me.
I remember Andrew being quite critical of buggy games in the past, particularly Bethesda games.
But the difference is this game
Which
is
I hear
still
you're a big fan
not
of,
a
no,
final game.
Bethesda games.
This guy loves Bethesda all of a sudden.
Love Bethesda.
All right. Well, we'll talk about stuff we've been playing in a bit, but I think we got to start with the Xbox One, which I have to admit I missed the first 5 minutes or so of the press conference. I don't know if they really explained the naming. I'm assuming it's just because they're looking at it as like an all-in-one, you know, device that does everything kind of thing. But I don't know. I thought it was a pretty bad name. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I don't know who came up with that idea, but it just seemed like a really bad idea to me. Yeah.
It's confusing, right? Like, I mean, when you think about
it's
it.
It's called the X-Bone.
Like, a lot of people call
hybridized.
Like, the Xbox 360 is out.
X-Boner?
A lot of people refer to the original Xbox as the Xbox One.
Yeah. So, I had heard rumors of the Xbox Infinity, which I thought wasn't bad.
Yeah. Infinity plus one for the next one.
What else was the other one? 720, which I never really saw as a
I never thought
reality
going to be it, but
Xbox One, pretty boring.
Yeah. Just like their press conference.
Well,
all right. Well,
spoilers.
Let's get into that. So, I mean, obviously, one of the big things to mention is that E3 is a couple weeks away. We know there's going to be more shown there. Sony will also have more stuff to show there, but kind of strange that they called this press conference before E3 and then sort of showed the stuff that they did show, which I think most people are in agreement that there wasn't a lot of actual games being shown off.
Well, it's interesting that they took almost a completely different approach from Sony, which showed a lot of games, revealed some specs, but really no hardware or details and not a lot of specifics in that regard. And it was like the complete opposite. This was all hardware talk, system talk, and I think what, two games we saw?
Three.
Call of Duty, like
Forza,
a millisecond of
and
Forza.
The Quantum.
Oh, I forgot about
Dream
that
trailer, non-gameplay.
Oh, hey, what was it called?
Quantum Dream.
Someone posted on
I
got it. Hang on. Quantum Break.
That's it. Yeah, right.
So what's the deal with that game? I saw, like, there's live action footage. I thought the trailer maybe only had live action footage, but today I read something that the game actually has live action footage.
Really?
Yeah, I was hoping it was the comeback, a full motion video. The acting was certainly at that level.
It's the TV game hybrid that Microsoft apparently wants.
I would say the acting is better in a lot of Sega CD full motion video games. That kid is just brutal. I mean, I don't know who saw that and thought it was a good idea. It's kind of scary, to be honest.
Well, I mean, it is a weird thing that if you're going to show off three games and that's one of them, and it doesn't even feel like you really there's anything there that's clear, or
the only thing you see is a boat smashing through a bridge.
You know what I found with like all the trailers, which I think Sony stayed away from a little more, is that I found that if you show, because the graphics are so good now, they're almost at a level where you can't really tell if they're CG trailer or gameplay. So, like, I found this with Deep Down, when they showed Deep Down for Sony.
Yeah.
You weren't really sure if it was a CG trailer or gameplay, and I felt that all the demo, or all the videos that were at these conferences that showed obvious gameplay came across way better, because you knew someone was actually playing that. They're capturing footage. It wasn't just a computer. Like, the Forza one looked amazing, but we've been seeing stuff like that for Gran Turismo 5 that are CG trailers. So how do you know if that's a CG trailer or gameplay? You don't right now. I mean, do you assume it's gameplay?
I assume it's gameplay because I didn't think it looked all that great. It looked kind of washed out.
That's what I mean.
I wasn't blown away.
It looks like what you've seen in CG trailers in the past. So it's, I think they need to show obvious gameplay trailers now. Like Watch Dogs showed gameplay trailers last E3 on top-notch PC hardware, right?
It's interesting that you mentioned Deep Down, which was actually one of the things I was most impressed with in the Sony press conference. And I remember that specifically being a game, like you said, where people weren't sure if this is in-game footage or not. And I just saw a little HUD for 30 seconds and assumed it was like, that was my thing. Oh, it's in-game. There's a HUD. There's a HUD on it. Obviously, they can fake that kind of stuff, but I like to hope that that's in-game footage and kind of leave optimism on the table.
Right. Well, I guess maybe we should quickly touch on specs, because, I mean, they kind of glossed over it, but, I mean, it's out there that it looks pretty similar to the PS4 from what I understand.
Eight cores. 8 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, and I think the difference there is they're DDR3 and PS4 is DDR5 or something like that.
Yep.
But I think 500 gig hard drive, is that right?
I saw people talking about that on Twitter.
I think so, yeah.
And obviously it's mandatory, it's built in. And then the new Kinect is built in, not optional.
You know what else is built in now? Wi-Fi. Big selling feature.
That is a big selling feature. But yeah, so I mean, the weird thing to me is that they came to this press conference really to sell the other features of the system, the live interactive TV stuff, the dashboard where it seems like you can minimize stuff and have things running in the background. You have Skype running on a game console for the first time. And there was like all the sports, like the live fantasy football stats updating. You got to be pretty excited about that, right, Frank?
Not so much.
Why is that?
Well, first of all, a lot of it is through NFL.com and ESPN, which, as far as I know, we don't get that in Canada. So I know a lot of people in Europe and other countries were complaining that a lot of the things they were promoting at this press conference were kind of North or American exclusive content. And that to me is a big problem. And I don't know if there's enough, population or demand out there for them to put the money into doing it for smaller interests and stuff like that.
So if that was available in Canada, is that something you think you would switch over to? Because like right now, I didn't see anything there that you can't do with like an iPad on your lap.
That's exactly where I was going to go. And yeah. I'm curious to see how Sony reacts, because I know everyone I've talked to has this conversation. I have 40 different ways to watch Netflix in my house, and I've got iPads, iPods, Apple TV, TVs that do it. There's a million ways, and I know it's expected for these consoles to support that kind of thing, and I'm fine with that, but I just don't know if that's what's going to separate you from other companies from now on.
I kind of feel like, I know people have been making fun of the fact that there weren't many games.
Can I just to put a dot on that?
Yeah.
I feel like that kind of stuff is more people expect than an attractive feature to these systems.
I agree with that right there, totally.
I feel like, well, for one, I think they're trying to appeal to, you know, people that aren't just gamers, right? They're throwing this out there like, this is this new entertainment device that everyone is going to want in their living room. And I think it's kind of smart. I mean, for one thing, the game industry is in a weird place right now. A lot of the big blockbuster games are not selling like they expect them to. I think banking on other stuff is a good idea. But, like you mentioned, the Netflix thing, like when the Xbox 360 and PS3 came out, I don't know if the Netflix streaming thing was around on PCs yet or not. But at this point, I think a lot of people use their game consoles more to watch Netflix than they do playing games. I mean, I do. I'll say it right now. I definitely do. And I think seeing these things as a media device is a big deal. And some of the stuff they showed, I mean, like, I'm not a huge sports guy, and like, I would not use the fantasy stats thing. But just the idea that you could have a personal experience with what you're watching on TV, and that they're kind of piping all this stuff through a powerful console like that, it's an interesting idea. Like, at least I feel like there's a little bit of innovation going on there.
I agree more with Graham, where I think the TV with a tablet as a companion serves the same agenda, and it's there. You don't need to see both on screen at the same time. Sure, it's kind of cool and a little more seamless, but I don't think it's a selling feature by any means.
I found it funny that it almost seems like Microsoft's Xbox is now directly competing with Microsoft Windows. because almost everything they showed off on Xbox One, I right now almost exclusively do on my PC on Windows. Like Skype, Netflix, I don't know, multiple windows for web browsing, multiple tabs.
That's the thing. Like a lot of people are saying, you know, hey, just buy a PC. Why would I get an Xbox One? But I would say PCs are dead, man. Like nobody uses. I don't use this thing except to record the podcast anymore. Like people want a device that's just in their living room.
Is that
easy.
The only thing you use it for?
It's the only thing I use it for.
I can think of one other thing I use my PC for.
No, I've got other devices for that. Trust me. But yeah, I mean, like I just don't see it as being something like PCs are almost like a niche device now, I find. And I mean, I could be wrong and maybe there'll be an explosion and the next gen will actually be PC gaming. But I doubt it. I've
been talking to a lot of people in the industry who are more and more becoming strict, hardcore PC gamers, people we know and have worked with. And I'm finding the older gamers, probably the 30s market, is moving more to PC.
Steam than
I ever thought. I'm surprised. I'm still a console guy. I haven't made that transition, and I doubt I ever will. So it's interesting to me.
Yeah, I just bought a new PC and it arrived today, actually.
Yeah?
Whoa.
Yeah,
I'm backing this up right now.
Interesting.
Anything in particular you're looking forward to?
My current computer is like a really crappy laptop, and I'm really looking forward to playing StarCraft 2 and Dota and those games, like checking those games out. I haven't played any of those yet, so that's one of the main reasons why I got it.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's definitely an audience out there for this kind of stuff. I will admit a Steam box could really, like, if they came out with a really cool device and I had to choose between Steam box, Xbox One, and PS4, there is a chance Steam box could win me over.
Eventually you'd buy all three though.
Probably.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. But, but yeah, I just think it's so early to call this, you know, and I do think that Microsoft is probably going to have some interesting exclusive games they're going to show off at E3, but
they better.
Well, there is the whole viral video that's been going around summarizing the Xbox press conference, which I think is pretty funny and accurate.
Yeah. Maybe I should play it here if I can find it real quick.
Let's put in a clip here. It's hilarious.
It's definitely making the rounds. I've had it sent to me by...
I don't think it was on there. I think I emailed it to you.
Someone put it in the comments.
Oh, is that what it was? Yeah, right. Yeah.
That was pretty funny.
I've had it sent to me about 5 times already by people in the gaming industry and people who, from my old jobs.
Just before you click on that, I think it's funny that, to me, okay, 2 things. One, the look of it looks exactly like a PS3, or B,
VCR.
A Rogers Nextbox 2.0.
The Nextbox connection is very interesting.
It looks identical. I'm like, and it's funny that it's identical because literally it is like Nextbox 3.0, where you have to take a Rogers as a Canadian thing. So you'll have to, all other listeners will have to look it up. But it looks identical, and it's kind of like the next evolution in TV, which is like, I think I put a quote from the Microsoft press conference that was like, our mission is to transform television. Like, that was a quote from there. So obviously they want to get into this like cable box media thing that,
right?
Like, they want TV. They don't, it's almost like Microsoft is ignoring gamers and wanted to go back to like the people watching TV and get them involved because the TV audience is so much bigger than the game audience.
Even from what I've heard, the trends of television in the future have been almost the elimination of cable service providers. It would just be each network or publishing company providing their own
like a whole bunch of Netflix
exclusive content version of Netflix. So Hulu is kind of the NBC Universal one right now. And that's, people predicted Netflix would even go out of business because everyone would have their own proprietary exclusive content and would want you to have to use their stuff to get it. So it's just the idea of having a guide and still using traditional cable. I'm sure it's a bit in the future, but I don't watch that much TV. I watch 4 shows. Maybe one of them was part of the press conference. The Price is Right.
It was targeted directly to you.
It really was. And it was all downhill from there. That's for sure.
Well, I think you're right that there...
But if there was a CBS app that I could watch Price is Right on, I would pay for their service and cancel my cable box tomorrow.
Yeah, well, like, it does feel a little bit like this is a stopgap solution where ultimately, yeah, all this stuff is just going to be online. So why are we even plugging this? Like, why is Microsoft going to the trouble to, you know, hook all this stuff up through your cable, like, to actually be a cable box, essentially? But maybe it's an important step. I'm not too sure. I did hear, though, that apparently because of the fact that there's so many different cable providers, and like you were saying, a lot of these features will only be available in North America to start with, but apparently there's another attachment you have to buy with the Xbox One, depending on who your cable provider is, to actually make this thing work, which is kind of annoying and potentially a problem. All right, let's listen to this thing real quick here.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing Xbox One.
TV experience. TV. TV and movies. TV. Xbox. Watch TV. 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 Watch TV. 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 TV remote. TV experience. TV. 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 Sports TV. 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 Anybody? TV, 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 Xbox, go home.
TV, 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 TV.
Sports, 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 sports,
sports, sport, 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 television, television, TV, television.
Television, 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 TV, TV, TV.
Xbox is about to become the next water cooler.
Sports, television, television, television. I'm thrilled to announce a live-action Halo television series.
Television, TV, sports, sports, sport.
Television, TV,
TV, TV, TV.
For Call of Duty.
Call of Duty, Call of Duty, Call of Duty. An entirely new Call of Duty for the next generation. Call of Duty, Call of Duty, Call of Duty, Call of Duty.
Call of Duty, Call of Duty.
One of the fascinating new additions to your squad is a dog. This is someone you care about. Call of Duty, Call of Duty.
Call of Duty, Call of Duty.
Call of Duty,
Call of Duty,
Call of Duty. All of the new story element. Call of Duty.
Call of Duty, Call of Duty, Call of Duty, Call of Duty, Call of Duty.
The new dog model is taken from high-resolution scans of an actual SEAL team service dog.
Call of Duty, Call of Duty, Call of Duty.
Xbox, go home.
So that reminds me, did you guys hear the reports that some people who were watching this on their yeah. Xbox, who actually had a Kinect, like a current Kinect hooked up, that every time they said Xbox whatever, it was actually activating their system shutting down their
makes
system.
Makes sense, yeah.
I mean, it's kind of crazy when you think about it. Like, anybody could put up, you know, a video on YouTube and like put, you know, secretly put in Xbox commands and fuck with your system. Like, what a terrible setup. But
I think maybe not so much the PlayStation press conference, but this one for sure, I think, is undermining the average person's adeptness for technology and their own ability to find ways to stream content, get content. I know friends of mine that, you know, figured out how to get US Netflix and they're not technologically savvy at all. Like, people can find stuff that they want if they hear about it. People are not that dumb anymore. They can figure this stuff out for themselves. And to market things as this is the all-in-one solution, I think there's a lot of people who already have those solutions, and I don't know if that convenience would be enough to sell them on this. I think they need something more.
Have any of you guys played around with this newer smart TVs or anything?
I have. My Panasonic had they're awful. Yeah.
Do they have any apps like Skype or Netflix or things like that built in?
It has Skype. It doesn't have Netflix, and I don't think it has YouTube, but even in general, the interfaces are not smooth. And
I think part of the problem with those too is that if you have like a sound system and a receiver and everything, then, you know, all this stuff is built into the TV, but if you want to pipe it back through your receiver, it's kind of
That's true too.
Okay.
But I will say, I think Skype on a game console is kind of a cool thing. Like, at the very least, it reminds me of Back to the Future too. Like, we're getting close to having that video phone up there on your TV.
I want the pizzas, the hydrator.
I want that too.
Yeah, because when I was watching the press conference, one of the things that was going through my head was, this is kind of stuff that should be built into my TV, not into my console. That's not what I'm going to a console for.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I was, even just the Sony's kind of picture of where social gaming is going was more interesting to me than what they had to say here. At least that's a unique interface and an easy way to share with a gaming community rather than... I was surprised they didn't expand that much on Xbox Live. Well, maybe they are, but they didn't say much. And
lots of servers.
Yeah. The idea of evolutionary achievements, I don't know what that is yet, but that's piqued my interest slightly.
They did a lot of stuff like that where they'd say like buzzwords and then not really explain what it was.
I was trying to think what that would be, and I'm still not sure.
Kind of like I wrote down, like, the Kinect stuff was really cool, but then they said it was like there was instant response. I was like, well, I don't think that's exactly going to be correct. And then they also were like, yeah, on our new controller, we got a new D-pad and impulse triggers. And then they just like left it. And I'm like, what the hell's an impulse trigger? Well, that's interesting to me.
I thought they said.
Did they say,
or you can provide force feedback specifically just to the triggers.
Oh, so. Okay. Maybe that does this. That rings a bell, yeah.
What did you guys think of the controller in general?
I've always been a big fan of the Xbox controller, so.
Yeah, it looks gorgeous, actually.
Ooh, yeah. High praise.
Yeah. Well, I guess one thing we should probably talk about, a few things we should talk about are the things that they didn't talk about at the press conference but have come out since. And obviously, there's a big deal being made about the used game stuff and the always-on internet connection requirements, which they haven't really clarified, but it seems like both are potentially a part of this console. Like, when I say used game stuff, I mean no used games, basically. Like, it sounds like every game, if you buy a retail game, it has to be installed to the hard drive, which they claim is because, you know, then you can quickly play it without having to put the disc in or any of that stuff. But if you take that disc to somebody else's house, potentially you have to pay a fee to then install it on their console. And while we don't know what that fee is yet, it sounds like it is basically the cost of the game itself.
Well, that's kind of funny because EA just announced that they're getting rid of their season pass.
That's probably why.
Which is, yeah, it probably pissed off a lot of people. And then Microsoft is...
No, I'm saying they probably know that all these consoles are going to be...
Oh, yeah, sure, maybe. But I mean, I guess that makes sense. But it seems like that... I don't know if that works for them or not, but it seems like Microsoft is going down the route that EA maybe just explored and wasn't really too happy with. I don't know. Maybe they were happy with it.
I think it's more that EA's reputation is so bad and they know that the consoles are going to be protecting that kind of stuff, or so it seems, that by doing this, it gives them a boost in like rep with the gamers, and they won't even have to worry about it anyway because people will be fucked.
That's true, actually. That's a good point. Yeah.
But I don't care about that stuff at all. I could care less if it's online or no used games. Not a problem for me.
I mean, I think it's just a bit sketchy that they didn't talk about it. And, you know, when they're asked about it, they kind of just say, well, we'll announce it at a later date. And then kind of confirm that, yeah, there's something there. So, I mean, that's definitely, I would say at this point, it's not just a rumor. Like, there's probably cause for some concern there. And the always on internet thing, they said, apparently it doesn't always have to be on, but you have to check in once a day. I have no idea what that means or why that would be a requirement.
That's funny, because I was watching the press conference through game trailers, and immediately after, Jeff Keighley had an interview with the main guy, I can't remember his name right now. And the first thing he asked, the very first thing he asked was about the always on thing, which I found funny because you just had this big press conference and you immediately start questioning about stuff they didn't have the press conference. But the guy, Matrick, I think is his last name, Don Matrick. Anyways, he was basically saying, you know, no, you don't have to be always on. You have to be on for like internet stuff like Netflix and Skype. And that's all he really said. And I was like, well, one, that's weird that that a game journalist, the first thing he asks is stuff not about what he just saw. And then two, that what I heard right from this guy's mouth is different than what you just said. So I'm wondering what's going on there. If maybe they haven't even figured it out what they want.
Yeah, that could definitely be. Or maybe they just don't know how they want to break it to people, because obviously it's going to get a negative reaction.
Or by rumors being out there, they can gauge how critical or hurtful a decision could go in either direction.
Right. So what about, like, so I know there were a few articles being written about indie developers and how they were completely ignored at this press conference. Like, I mean, Sony at least had, Jonathan Blow up there. Like, they had a few things being shown off that clearly showed that, you know, they want more than just these massive blockbusters on their console. Did you have any thoughts on that, Graham?
Yeah, I guess Microsoft, you know, they do have some indie friends. I know, like, Capybara is making games for them, and there's a couple of studios that make exclusively Microsoft games. But I was kind of surprised there was no mention of anything like about Xbox Live Arcade or what's the future of Xbox Live Arcade in the press conference. It doesn't feel like that was their priority at this thing. It seems like they were really trying to talk to people who love Call of Duty, people who love sports. So it's
over to TV
and TV, definitely TV.
Well, it's tough to. Sorry, go ahead, keep going.
No, that's pretty much it. It's just like there was no information really, and hopefully, like they've said that they're going to talk more at E3, be more focused on games, and hopefully they'll talk more about that stuff there. But yeah.
I mean, clearly the opinions we're giving are that of being fans of video games. In terms of the general public, the games they're talking about are the ones that sell the most: sports games, Call of Duty, racing, whatever, the big UFC stuff. So it doesn't not make sense to me that that's what they showed. It might be a better market strategy, and it might be those are the buzzwords that are going to get people who might not know. We're going to follow these press conferences no matter what. If just people are kind of on the fringe of gaming hear those things, they might look into it more rather than, and maybe that's who they're targeting. It's not, we don't know their internal strategies, who they're targeting, what, you know, metrics they have on who they need to make aware of this system. So it could be a totally different strategy that we're obviously just talking, this is kind of lame and we know this stuff already. It's kind of obvious, but they clearly have a game plan. We don't know if it'll pay off yet, but in terms of being interesting from a gamer's perspective, I say it would be unanimous from gamers that they were kind of bored by it.
I think what's interesting to me about the 5 minutes of game-related stuff we saw at this press conference was that the big things they talked about, the exclusive things they talked about, were tiny things like the DLC for Call of Duty being exclusive when really it's like a timed exclusive. It's not really exclusive. And then the exclusive content for FIFA, which is probably also a timed exclusive thing. So comparing that to Sony's, they had like exclusive games they were showing off, which is quite a bit more impactful than you can get an exclusive card in your FIFA Ultimate Team that you can only get on Xbox and only 1 out of 1,000 people will actually get it. I just found it funny that they put so much emphasis on, like, of their 5 minutes, they spent all this time talking about exclusive nothingness, really, like fluff.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe there was no Gears of War or Halo other than the Halo TV series.
Or even, like, a new Epic title.
But that's why I respect the PlayStation one so much is, I know we kind of made fun of Knack and stuff like, is that what it was called?
Yeah.
But at least
yeah.
I'll give them credit. Like, I'm curious about the game, and it's something completely different. And some of the other games were new takes on franchises, like the Jonathan Blow game, just totally different stuff that at least they're trying something new. And they're always going to have their exclusive stuff that is going to come out, and people are kind of aware of it. So at least I was somewhat interested and curious after the PlayStation press conference, where this one, it was just a complete downer.
Yeah, well, I mean, it did occur to me, like, as I was watching some of the EA presentation, I was thinking, like, is there anything they could show me that would actually get me really excited?
I thought the same thing, and what came to your mind?
Nothing.
No? Anyone?
No.
I thought maybe Knights of the Old Republic.
I was hoping for Shadow Complex 2.
Fair enough, but I wasn't even thinking like in terms of specific games. I was just like, okay, you're showing me what the next generation of sports games are going to be. What can impress me? And I just think we're past that
footage.
Well, maybe, but I think we're past that point where, you know, the graphics are a little bit better and wow, it's that much more realistic. Like, it's such so incremental at this point that it's not that big of a deal. And I'm more excited about the Jonathan Blow game. Like, show me something completely different.
I can name one thing out of any system, any manufacturer that would intrigue you. The only thing that might intrigue you, and you know what it is.
What?
A new 2D Metroid.
Well, I didn't expect to see that.
Well, obviously, you're not going to see that at Xbox, but right. I think that's the only thing anywhere that would make you excited.
Me?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I mean, you're talking about Knack, stuff like that.
Got announced, I was like, you going to get one, man? He's like, I don't know. What if they had a 2D Metroid? Well, probably pick one up.
I will definitely admit to that, but I'm just saying, like, when you see presentations for new consoles, we've talked about it before, usually that's the best time to launch new IP. And it, so far, it hasn't really been happening that much. I mean, the Sony one had some stuff in there, but there's nothing, you know, like Watch Dogs is the only thing that immediately comes to my mind as, like, something that's on the new consoles that's a new franchise that looks exciting. And I mean, that's not exclusive to any one console, but I mean, the one thing I was surprised about, actually talking about the Call of Duty thing, I totally thought there was these rumors going around that they have an exclusive on Respawn, the next like the people who left Infinity Ward and formed their own studio. I thought that's what they were going to announce.
I thought I read that too. Yeah.
But they didn't. They just went to Call of Duty, which is going to be on the PS4 as well. So it's strange. Like, yeah, like they're highlighting these games, which obviously they're the biggest sellers on any.
Yeah, Forza is the only exclusive, like true exclusive that they showed.
Right.
And Sony has their own version of that too, right?
Yeah. And a new thing. They got that, what's like new racing game they announced too.
Oh, yeah.
On top of Gran Turismo.
Can't remember what it's called.
Yeah.
The only thing that it has me even remotely interested is that Rare is going to announce a historic franchise, a revamping of that at E3. So that's the only thing I'm holding on to at this point. If it's a Banjo-Kazooie game, I'm suspecting it's a Battletoads game, but that's...
What?
Yeah.
Conker's bad for a day.
Blast Corps.
Now, is Battletoads owned by Trade West? Does anyone know? If they own the intellectual property. I don't think so, right? Because there was an EA arcade game with Battletoads.
No idea.
I don't know.
But that's the one I think it's going to be, and I think it's going to be in the style of maybe Arkham City, Arkham City's version of... Because do you remember when people were talking... Well, the rumor was there was a Ninja Turtles version of Arkham City being made by Rocksteady. Is that right? Did I say that?
Yep.
Okay. And everyone was losing their shit over it.
Right.
I mean, Battletoads isn't as good.
I mean,
but
Battletoads
in my opinion,
is not...
In my opinion, it's better. Well, I'd be more excited for
Battletoads
than Turtles.
Is an exciting game property, but it's not an exciting entertainment property. There's not really a story there to...
Don't be so sure.
Okay. I mean, maybe. If Battletoads happened, I think it would just be like a downloadable, you know, Xbox Live or PSN game.
I think it's going to be a Viva Pinata TV series that they announce.
That already happened.
A TV series?
Yeah, there was a cartoon already.
Exclusive to Xbox?
Well, it was on YTV and stuff.
Oh, damn.
I do love you, Pinata, though. It's really good.
Okay.
I miss Rare. I hope they do announce something good.
Was there anything else? Like, I feel like...
There's nothing in this press conference.
Yeah, I mean, just there's not a ton of stuff to talk about, but...
There's the backwards compatibility stuff.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's...
Yeah, that's another thing I was a little bit disappointed about. Like, I wanted to be able to at least play my old downloaded games. I guess Sony also has a similar problem, but they potentially have some solution with Gaikai streaming or something that they're working on.
Yeah, and Microsoft didn't... They did announce they have cloud technology stuff, but they didn't announce any streaming game stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
So. And Sony's actually been good about PS1 classics and Vita games that you downloaded working on the Vita.
Yeah.
And at least it seems there's a bit of a focus on that stuff rather than just, nope.
You mean games you download on the PSP work on the Vita?
Yeah, or on...
Or PS1.
Or PS1.
PS1 yeah, classics I downloaded on my PS3.
I found it funny overall that, in general, like, Microsoft's press conference was on one end of the extreme of the spectrum. Like, they're totally focused on social and non-gaming. And then Sony was pretty much focused on gaming. And it's just so funny because all the stuff Microsoft talked about, I almost just assume is going to be there. Skype, maybe not. Skype, I guess it's a big deal. But they showed off, like, they made a big deal of, like, picture-in-picture, which, I mean, I don't really need made a big deal of the social stuff, which I think Sony spent maybe a sentence on. They said, yeah, we're going to have Facebook integration or whatever they said. And I just found it funny that they're almost looking at it from two completely different perspectives, but working for the same market, or roughly the same market. I just don't know. It's interesting to see how it's going to play out in the coming months.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I would say is, you know, like I guess we can say which one we think we would buy first or which one we think is the strongest currently. I mean, if I had to choose right now, I would buy a PS4. But
the honest answer is whichever one comes out first.
That's a good point. They didn't announce a release date, but I would just say, like, I wouldn't count Microsoft out yet. Like, I don't think they're stupid. I think they are laying out the broad sort of like stuff that the mainstream people want to hear about right now. And I think they're going to have stuff for hardcore gamers too. But, it's so hard to say right now. Some of the stuff, the TV stuff that they're showing off, like, it could be complete garbage. It could be completely useless, something that nobody wants, or it could be something that changes how people watch TV, and it could be something that everybody wants. I'm not sure right now, but, you know, I'm still open to seeing what it's all about, I guess. What do you guys think, you know, if you had to pick one right now?
PS4 all the way, but I'm already a Sony fanboy, so.
Yeah, same here, PS4. I think, like, it seems like this press conference was almost like they're trying to expand their market or something. Like, they're trying to break through out of gamers into non-gamers, and I'm hoping at E3 they can swing me, but right now I feel like PS4 has got me a lot more excited than the Xbox.
I wonder if because it was on Spike, they were, like, trying to cater to, like, whatever Spike's market is, if it's, like, probably 30 to 40-year-olds, I wonder if they're trying to appeal to them. Like, you can watch sports and whatever TV you want on this thing.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was saying before. They play Call of Duty, they play sports games.
Yeah, So that's probably, the Spike market. So this is probably, like, totally tailored to Spike TV.
Yeah, there's clearly a strategy with the press conference. So we'll just have to see if it pays off. All I can say is when I started just going for trophies about a year and 2 months ago, it was probably the best decision I ever made. It was kind of when I committed to Blu-ray 2 months into the format wars.
Or right choice.
What was that called? Was it?
Yeah,
format high def wars. Sure. I committed to Blu-ray early and I made the right decision. Frank's committing to PS4 early. Ooh. I have a pretty good track record.
One for one.
You might want to get on board.
Should we mention the stocks? The stock values? Yeah.
What happened?
Immediately after the Microsoft press conference, Microsoft stock went down like 0.5% or something, but then Sony stock rose 8%. They just skyrocketed.
Mm. But wasn't there also something else? I can't remember what it was.
They were talking about they were splitting something, some division into two pieces or something.
Microsoft was?
No, Sony was.
Oh.
And it was like a good business decision. Both things happened at the same time, so it's not clear.
And on top of that, there's such small fractions of those companies. It's, I don't think, like, when you said 0.5%.
Yeah, that's nothing.
That seems more in line of what I would expect the impact of one of these press conferences.
Yeah, it wasn't really the Microsoft going down, but it was the Sony going up so much that seemed telling that maybe everyone's putting their chips in the Sony bin.
Well,
right
I would have
now.
To look at what Nintendo did that day, too.
Yeah, I don't know.
But it's not like Nintendo. If Nintendo has a bad press conference, that's when you see huge hits. Like, their whole business is gaming, so...
Yeah.
I don't know. I actually am starting to get more excited about Nintendo as of late. And even, like, we'll see what happens with the Sony press conference, but the Xbox, nothing's really got me excited. But some of the Nintendo Direct and exclusive games there, like even Pikmin 3 looks awesome.
Have you been following those, like, when they come out?
Just the wrap-ups, really. I haven't been watching them. But I don't know. I'm excited for Nintendo exclusive stuff. And I think, I just don't know if they're prepared to take advantage of the kind of the duds that are being laid right now. I don't think, it feels like everyone is not prepared for this at all. They were doing so well, and I think they all saw that the industry was kind of in flux and no one knew where it was going, but they just got to a point where, well, we got to do something, so people expect it, and maybe that's a way to make money just by having a new console.
And, well, it is interesting that you know, with all this stuff happening, you know, something like a Steam Box or Ouya or something could just come in and totally change everything. I mean, I don't necessarily think either one of those will, but it's definitely possible right now.
Should we, before we leave the Xbox reveal, should we talk about Call of Duty Ghost at all? Go a little more in depth about that?
I didn't see a whole lot to make it seem different than a better looking version of Call of Duty.
I just felt that it was almost like they were trying too hard. It was like Microsoft needed to fill whatever it was, 10, 15 minutes of time, and they were just like searching for anything they could, like the dog thing.
It was the fish AI.
Like, come on now, fish AI. They also were like, yeah, we got Sub D. I'm like, Sub D? I looked, the first article that it's Subdivision Surfaces. The first article was in 1977 for Subdivision Surfaces. I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I've experimented with that like years ago when we were at SK. And it's not super cutting edge. I'm sure tons of other games have it right now.
Well, it was the high-res textures that they mentioned 5 times comparing models. Look at this high-res texture.
Look at this face.
Are you kidding me?
Those arms look really cool.
Hey, man, they got Stephen Gaggin writing the script. That's all I care about.
You don't care about the dog actor? Didn't you see the live-action dog footage?
It was an impressive dog. Oh, no. I will give him that.
What I did find interesting and kind of cool, not in a I-want-to-play-this-game kind of cool, the way the game looks, Call of Duty looks, the new one, it really does look like a next-gen version of Call of Duty. They've kept their art principles, the style, the animation. It really looks similar. Normally, there's kind of a jump from generations, and even a game that you liked in one generation looks a little different in the next generation. It really just looks like a blown-out version of the same game. Which I kind of like. It keeps the series going and
trilogy cred.
On that on that note, I'm a little not concerned, but interested to see how people react to now the ultra high res violence that's going to come out of these Call of Duty games, because they even showed, I don't know if you guys noticed, but one of their like wireframe, they had like a wireframe video, and it was of a guy stabbing another guy in the neck. And I was like, yeah, if you're getting that close and it looks that good, like, I mean, the arms they showed looked like real arms, let's be honest. Now, you have a real-looking guy getting stabbed in the neck with real blood shooting out. I'm sure that's going to rub people a lot worse than it does already, and it already makes people upset.
I thought you were going to say he had a wireframe cock flapping around.
Oh, you didn't see that? That was there, too.
Was it? I didn't see that.
New cock physics.
It's like the poo physics. Stepping it up.
That's what the next gen offers. So, anything else about the Xbox One that you guys want to talk about?
No.
I can't really think of anything else right now.
Oddworld Munch's Odyssey, Project Gotham Racing, some other good Xbox One games, Jet Set Radio Future.
Yep.
Xbox the first.
Okay, well let's move on, and you guys have a couple, you know, game conference, I don't know what you want to call them, type things that you want to talk about. I don't know, like Andrew, how was GDC?
GDC was amazing, actually. So, Graham, have you been before?
Yeah, I've been a couple times. Yeah.
Okay, and I know you guys haven't, right?
I have not.
Nope.
So, It was a great experience. I would definitely want to go back. I actually only stayed... So the conference is a whole week, Monday to Friday. I actually left Wednesday night on a red eye, and I regretted it almost as soon as I left. You're just around so many awesome people, and it's pretty amazing because I've bounced around a few companies now, so I know people have spread out everywhere. And like I ran into like Skackle, who's at Blizzard now, on the show floor just randomly walking around, and it's amazing to just run into like random people you used to work with who are now on the other side of the country basically, and just seeing all the talks of people you see on, you know, videos and interviewed and stuff like that. It's pretty interesting, and you can go pick their brains, and they're really like open to talking to you. It's just a great experience overall, and if you guys ever get a chance, definitely go. A little pricey, but Don't stay in the Tenderloin district.
My biggest reservation about GDC's packs and stuff like that is kind of what we talk about on film junk sometimes, the Midnight Madness version of movies and those crowds. And
things get overhyped.
I'm a little worried it'd be too much nerding out. And
yeah, you hate it when too many people love something.
Yeah, basically. It's. I don't know.
There is some of that around. I don't want to like name names, but there are certain groups that tend to go a little overboard, and you just stay away from them, and you leave their talks. You just walk out when they're going a little too off the deep end. But
I'd still love to go one time, though.
Now, is GDC, like, you would recommend it for people in the industry?
Yes, only really. It's not really useful for, like, so the first 2 days I attended mainly, I bounced back and forth between lectures for, they called the AI Summit, which focused completely on artificial intelligence, and then also the indie, which is more indie games, mainly talks about how indie developers made their game and pitfalls they ran into and things like that. So not super informative, more of a look out for these pitfall type thing. But the AI one, after doing AI for so long now and have been watching GDC videos over the years, it was still a good refresher, but a lot of the stuff they talked about I've either experimented with or read in depth about. So it wasn't really the, oh wow, that's amazing feeling that I got in the past. But it was nice to like be there and see these people doing their talks.
From some of the GDC videos I've watched, they're really good at summarizing a lot of cool ideas in one presentation and visualizing them with debug tools.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the cool part. You know, the stuff works and they've developed it, and they've developed it well because they have all these tools, you know, to show their heat maps or whatever of like how everything affects as it's going through the level, which is really interesting and how you get really cool AI. But the steps from idea to that are really complicated in between. So if you sit down to do a project like that, you got to really be prepared to put in a lot of time to do that. And it's not something you could just jump into. You got to do a lot of reading, a lot of research. So still really interesting, though.
Like sort of trade shows in general have this reputation. Like, I'm not talking about game industry, I'm talking about any industry. They have this reputation where people come and give talks, and a lot of times it's just them kind of promoting themselves, but not really giving you good information, or, you know, just information you could get anywhere. Would you say that this is not that? This is actually really good stuff?
It's definitely better. I found there were certain, like, some of the indie talks were kind of like that. I mean, I wouldn't say they're promoting like shameless plugs constantly, but they weren't really giving you useful information. They're talking about their process, which was very specific to their situation in their studio, which probably doesn't go over to really, it doesn't transfer to anything helpful. But there was a few really neat talks I saw. One guy was talking about how he came up being a toy maker, the guy who made Splunky. And he grew up and he learned all this design from designing kid toys out of wooden blocks and stuff. And it was a really interesting talk, and really had nothing to do with Spelunky. He just had made Spelunky, and that's how he basically got into the talk. But it was really interesting. But it's definitely not shameless plugs. Like, the AI has nothing to do with shameless plugs. They basically give them like 15, 20 minutes of, here, quickly go into depth about your one thing and then move on to someone else in like an hour session. So it's definitely not shameless plugs. And there's also a show floor section. I've never been to an E3, but I imagine it's not really like the bells and whistles of an E3, but everyone has a booth. Like, Drinkbox had a booth with Guacamelee on it, and it was in a big indie, do you know what it was officially called? The Indie Festival?
Yeah, that was the IGF.
Yeah, the IGF.
Yeah, yeah.
So they had their own little section on the show floor. So all of the big indie games were in this one specific area. Everyone was there. It was probably the busiest spot in the whole show floor. But most of the show floor was actually dedicated to companies recruiting and other companies trying to sell you things. So, like, Handsoft was there.
Good old Handsoft.
Yeah.
Perforce.
Yeah, Perforce was there. Lots of like developer tools. And
were they handing out like airplanes, little wooden
Havoc?
Airplanes?
I don't recall seeing Havoc.
Wise.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't
go through the list.
But I mean, like,
scale form.
And then there was other things like
Anarch.
Like Sheridan College was there trying to recruit people to go to school for the animation program.
Right.
So there's like a wide range of, or they're promoting the game program they now have, but wide range of people. It wasn't just all games. And then they had another, I think it's called GDC Play, which was basically like you paid for a booth area and you were able to show off your game to people. So there was a lot of ranges from indie developers to like more serious developers in there as well. Well, I shouldn't say more serious, but larger teamed developing houses.
Right.
Yeah. And I didn't go to too many parties, but they're a lot of fun, obviously. I went to a few press events showing off Citizens of Earth, which is a lot of fun. The only problem is I have an issue with draft beer, and I had one pint of draft beer and was completely hungover the next day, which really was not a lot of fun. One little pint screwed me. I was desperate.
You're a pussy.
Could give me a 26er of rye, I would have been fine, but this one little pint of glass beer. But yeah, it's always fun to get randomly awoken from a complete hungover nap saying you have to run to an interview in half an hour. So that's always a fun time.
So the GameSpot interview, yeah, you guys did is up.
Yeah, that's the one where I'm completely hungover. Yeah. So yeah, it's on GameSpot. We also did another interview after, which was just voices. But that's not up. I don't know if that's ever going to go up or what is going to go up. I'm not sure.
They were just telling you it was being recorded.
Yeah, they were just trying to be
really
nice. Yeah. Yeah, but the video's up. And yeah, go watch it. Go check it out. I think it turned out well. The build he is showing is actually older than the one we took to GDC. But it's basically the same as the one we showed at GDC. So a lot of the other videos you'll see on YouTube are basically the same. And we had a few other... The first night I was there, the Monday night, there was an IGN event for independent developers that I went to, and it was basically from 6 o'clock till 11 o'clock at night. So it was quite a long time. That's why I needed a little liquid on my throat. And funny story is, it was basically just they had a run of tables along two walls. And we had just got set up. We had three computers set up with our game, showing it off. My laptop constantly overheating and dying. Never fun. So we're down to two machines. We just get our two machines set up. The press start coming in. The power in our entire row goes down for about an hour. So our one PC was gone. We only had Ryan's laptop. So we're running on one laptop. We originally had three, down to one. So we were able to show it off a little bit, but... until we got the power back, it's just a really like something you can never plan for. Really, we were just lucky we didn't have, like, there were people there with just one PC and that was it, and they were completely screwed for that whole hour.
Wow.
Yeah. So luckily though, most of the press didn't arrive until later. So
of course.
yeah, they'd already been out drinking before. But it was really good. We got a lot of good press. Some of the best things we got were guys would come around, and if you watch the GameSpot video, Ryan's a pretty charismatic guy. He's really passionate. And one of the guys from Joystick came around and accused him of being a media plant. And they didn't even want to look at the game because they thought he was trained in promoting the game.
Well, that's weird.
Yeah. And they didn't even want to look at, the guy didn't even want to look at the game. And finally, Ryan like basically said, like, listen, I don't care if you don't want to play the game. Here's the demo. Like, we had it on a USB stick. Here's the demo. Play it if you want. It's right here. If you want to just sit down, like, we won't judge. If you hate it, that's fine. And the guy ended up sitting down for like 15 minutes and playing probably the longest of anyone that
fucking
came to see.
Joystick.
Bunch or of as the Pixel Knox guys like to say, joystick.
Nice. So did you get a chance to play anything though, or not really?
I walked around. I really didn't have too much time. I was basically manning the booth the whole time. And if I wasn't manning the booth, I was walking around looking for press, trying to bring them over, because it was pretty crowded. There was probably, I'd say, 30 to 40 indie guys crammed into this room. Well, I guess it was a pretty big room, but still, it was quite a lot, and it was really jammed. And it was really interesting to see the cross-section, because there's guys that are there showing off a game but getting completely bombed. And then there's Ryan and I who are completely serious, having like one or two beers, but constantly going out trying to bring press back to show the game off to. And there's guys like 10 feet away from us playing drinking games, like right beside us. We're like, you guys are totally missing the point of this indie presser. But I don't know, to each his own, I guess. Whatever you want to do.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of fun, though. I'd recommend it to anyone in the industry to definitely go check out GDC because it's well worth it.
Okay, cool. So then on the flip side, we've got PAX.
Yeah, PAX is a very different beast than GDC. It's much more open and friendly to non-game developers. In fact, the primary people who go there are just gamers, and not just video gamers, but like tabletop gamers or people who love, I don't know, Magic the Gathering.
LARPers.
LARPers, yeah. Yeah. You see a lot of cosplay on the show floor. There's media there too, so... So, I went to PAX East. It was like right before GDC. They were back to back this year, and that's the main reason why I didn't end up.
I saw a few people that did the double shift. They came from East Coast PAX East to West Coast GDC. They were just dead, absolutely dead.
Yeah, that's a killer combination, I think. So I spent most of the time working at our Drinkbox booth. We organized this really big collaboration with other indies. Kelly Wallach did it. It's called the Indie Mega Booth. So there was like 25 indie companies all in one section of the PAX floor. The biggest booth on the PAX floor was this Indie Mega Booth. And so I spent most of my time just talking to press and talking to people who were coming through to play our game, Guacamelee. But once in a while, I got to go out and explore. And I guess the most fun thing I have at these shows, PAX specifically, is just like trying to find new things that I haven't heard of. I didn't know there was a DuckTales game.
Well, it was announced there, I believe.
Yeah, so I showed up and I started setting up the booth, and just across like 20 feet away, I see DuckTales. I'm like, whoa, what is this? This is pretty awesome. And Dive Kick, that's the first time Dive Kick was out. That was a huge
hit.
Yeah. So every time someone would come by our booth, I would just ask them, hey, what's cool on the show floor that you've seen? And everyone was saying Dive Kick. And that game had a huge crowd around it the whole time.
So what is Dive Kick? I've heard of it, but like I don't...
So the way they try and sell Dive Kick is it's like... It's a fighting game, but like scaled back just to the essence. So you have two buttons. And they use these giant oversized buttons, like... kind of jokingly, and one of them says dive on it and one of them says kick on it. So dive is like kind of like a jump button, and kick is like, I don't know, the names are confusing, but like, basically you have a jump and a kick, and I think whoever's higher in the air wins the battle. So there's like this, you're trying to be higher than the other person, and the game is just packed full of silliness. Like one of the characters is named Redacted. And it's like his name's crossed out, like he was supposedly cut from the game. He got back in. But yeah, there's huge crowds and people cheering, like people watching were all cheering. It was really fun to watch that. I don't know. There's a lot of cool games, actually. Even just in an indie mega booth, there's this game called Contrast, which is like, it's a Unreal Engine game where you run around, but your character can go into the shadows on the wall, and it becomes like a 2D platformer when you do that. So you have to manipulate objects and lights in the environment to make shadows in a way that you can traverse through the shadows on the wall. It's pretty cool.
It's by Compulsion Games.
Yeah.
Used to work with those guys at Bedlam.
Yeah, Guillaume. Yep. And what else? Super Time Force is looking really amazing. Like, it's come a long way since I saw it at the previous PAX. Yeah, DuckTales was really fun. And like after the show floor shuts down, you can walk around and play games too. On the first night, they're giving out free drinks to all the people who are showing. And we were drinking and playing a lot of Battle Block Theater, which was actually a lot of fun. I haven't played it since it's come out, but I was having a lot of fun there at that game. Yeah, and I don't know. It's definitely a much more accessible show than GDC is for most of the listeners. Yeah.
Except that the tickets sell out real fast.
Yeah, if you want to get like an all access pass for the whole weekend, you got to buy it like right away.
I think there's three PAX shows now, right? PAX East, PAX Prime, which is Seattle.
Yeah.
And there's one other one, I think, right?
Australia. Yeah.
Australia.
The open one in Australia.
I thought there was another one in like Houston or something, but I guess.
Yeah, so PAX, the next PAX is going to be in Seattle near the end of August, but I think it's already sold out. Like,
Yeah. It does kind of remind me of like a film festival for games kind of thing, where you just basically come and get to play, you know, get first crack at playing these games that aren't out yet. And
yeah, that's really just a small part of it, though. Like when the show, when the main floor shuts down at night, they put barriers up so you can't get into that part. But the rest of the convention center stays open, and all night people are playing games, like tournament style. There's like just walking around some of the rooms up there, they have like SNES is hooked up and people are playing competitive Super Mario speedruns and anything you can think of. There's like beanbag chair sections that are everyone just sitting playing DS games, and it's just a really weird and awesome environment.
I think it's amazing how that has exploded. Like PAX yeah. East is just, oh, PAX in general, any PAX is just huge, huge, huge. I think like PAX Prime sold out in like under a day or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it was ridiculous how quick, and it's not a small place. There's tons of tickets, so.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know a ton about it, but it seems like it's because it's very much for the gamers. It's not an industry thing, and, you know, it's just open, and, you know, it's something that they're encouraging anyone to come and play whatever the hell they want, and it's not about, you know, these companies coming and just trying to show you, like, what they're trying to sell you this year or whatever, like, because that's basically what E3 is and what some of these other ones have been for years. So, yeah, I don't know. It seems kind of refreshing, actually.
People aren't trying to force anything down your throat. It's yeah. just kind of there if you want it or not.
Yeah, it's like another Comic-Con, basically, but for gamers, I guess, or yeah, something like yeah. that. Okay, cool. So, well, I guess we should talk a little bit about some news stuff. And I guess we might as well talk a little more about the DuckTales thing, because that... That, to me, was huge news, because like lots of these, you know, older games from the 80s are being remade and whatnot. But, I mean, I never thought DuckTales would be one of them, because it's a licensed game. It's tied to this property that's kind of dated now. It just, you never would think that that's something they would bring back. But, I mean, I'm hearing great things about it.
Yeah.
Like, is it like a straight up remake, or like I guess they're adding some stuff to it as well to make it longer?
Yeah, I didn't play it for too long, but it seems like it's definitely true to the original. Just like it has better graphics, but it's it kind of, the thing about this game that kind of blew me away also was just the surprise of it, because like I wasn't, you know, I'm a big fan of platformers, and I wasn't expecting this at all. And it was a game that I loved playing back in the day, but like never think about it nowadays. And just like having it come back like out of nowhere was kind of a cool thing.
Yeah. Are you guys excited?
I'd be more excited if it was Chippendale Rescue Rangers, but
you never know.
I'm Tailspin, maybe? Tailspin?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited if this game does well, the chain reaction that
yeah,
could take
totally.
Away. So
definitely.
I'm surprised Capcom hasn't done more like reskinning of Mega Man games in the same vein as DuckTales. Like, to me, that seems, those would sell really well. I guess they might sell really well just selling them as the NES versions, like they're doing on the 3DS shop and starting to do on the Wii U virtual console as well. But to me, that would be a big deal if they did that.
You mean like up-res Mega Man 1 and 2 kind of thing?
Yeah. Or like the 2.5D version.
The thing is, like, generally I don't like the upgraded, like I want to see the original graphics.
I don't.
I mean, from what I'm hearing, the DuckTales one actually looks really good, so that's why I'm curious to see what they do with it.
Well, even on Vita, they did Maverick Hunter, so remaking Mega Man X in 2.5D, and I thought that was awesome. I'm all for that kind of stuff. I love... It'd be weird if all that gaming did was kind of take advantage of new graphics to remake old games. I'd probably still play games the same amount.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's what I play mostly, I would say.
That's why Nintendo is still in business.
That's why you platinum Guacamelee.
Not yet.
Oh, no? I thought I saw you did.
No. Getting there.
Well, we have a junk mail that may be related to that. But so I guess we got to talk about the whole LucasArts thing, because that happened in between the last podcast and this podcast. And I think that was a pretty huge deal. Like, I mean, we all knew that Disney bought Lucasfilm, and, you know, I guess LucasArts was apparently part of that deal. But, you know, at the time, there was no real talk about what that meant, or, you know, what they were going to do with some of the games that were in development. And then pretty much they just decided to shut it all down because they're not interested in games. And in particular, there was the Star Wars, was it 1313? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Or 1313? I don't know. But that a lot of people were really looking forward to that game, and then it sounded like it was just done. They were just shutting it down, and that was it. But then a few weeks later, they announced that EA had actually acquired the rights to Star Wars and will be taking over Star Wars games. Now, did they actually say if any of those ones that were in development are going to be saved? I thought they did, but I don't know for sure.
I thought the opposite.
Yeah, I thought I heard 1313 is done.
It's still done?
Because they were trying to say, oh, it was actually... They kind of had this, what'd you call it, obituary almost, and were saying, oh, it would have been a Boba Fett game, which they hadn't released yet, and all this other stuff. So I don't think that's happening.
Hmm. Well, so any thoughts on this from you guys?
Have they said anything about it? What studios would actually be doing any of this work yet?
I don't think so. I'm guessing...
I saw some. I can't remember... who off the top of my head, but I thought I did see it released somewhere. And I remember thinking that the studios had some pretty good pedigree behind them.
I think most people were just assuming it would be like BioWare and some other companies that...
Well, yeah. Like if they put... I think one of them was the guys who do Battlefront. Battlefront, that's right.
Yeah, actually, I did hear some people saying that.
Battlefield.
And the rumor would be like a Frostbite version of Battlefront.
Which I think would be pretty incredible, but those guys must be so taxed. They must be, because I know EA is using that Frostbite engine for like all first-person games they make now. So they must have a technology team to develop that engine. Then they had the Battlefield team. Then they're going to have the Star Wars team. That's a lot of guys to be managing and keeping track of. And I'm sure they have other properties on the go too.
So it says here, they're obviously going to be announcing stuff at E3, and it says BioWare, Visceral Games, and DICE are all working on Star Wars projects.
Like Visceral, they did Dead Space, right? So
yeah,
if they can make some sort of
Star Wars horror game
spinoff, that would be pretty cool.
Man. Shadows of the Empire remake.
Look out.
Interesting. Yeah, but I mean, obviously, I think everyone is expecting a Knights of the Old Republic 3.
Yeah,
which from BioWare.
Yeah, but
it would be the obvious choice.
Yeah.
So, who owns the actual publishing rights to that game? Is it Microsoft? Like the other ones were published by Microsoft. Knights of the Old Republic 1, but they're on Steam.
They're on Steam now, right? Yeah, they're on PC.
Yeah they're for sure on Steam. So maybe it was just an exclusivity period or something like that.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that works, but I guess the thing for me about this whole story is it sucks. Okay, Star Wars games are still going to be made. Yes, I mean, I don't think anyone ever really questioned that, but like LucasArts, there were a lot of great games made there, and like I certainly grew up on a lot of their games, and it just sucks that, you know, they're pretty much gone now.
Like, yeah, well, what happens with their intellectual property? That's what I'm not really...
Disney owns it, for sure. Right?
Yeah. I would assume Disney still owns it, but will they do anything with it? Probably not.
I'm sad at the prospective loss of some remakes of some older classic LucasArts games. But overall, I don't think many people feel this way, but I will go on record as I think this is awesome, and I think the games are going to be much better as a result.
What
if, I'm not down with the EA Empire or the Empire as you put on. Was it you?
No, it wasn't me. No,
but
no.
It's all him. I have no problem with it. It's okay by me, and I think we will benefit as gamers.
What had LucasArts actually shipped recently?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think the last thing they did was that Star Wars Kinect dancing game or whatever.
So
classic.
Well, did they do all the weird 32-bit era stuff, like the fighting game Masters of Terra Sky and
Dark Forces? I think that was
They them. Did Dark Forces, yeah. There's the 2D fighter, the Star Wars fighter. Did they do... I would love to see a new Rebel Assault.
Yeah, that wouldn't be bad. Full motion. It's coming back.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, this is annoying. I wish they had it in...
Chronological? Yeah. Piece sort? No.
No. But yeah, I mean, I can't think of anything really recently that was amazing by LucasArts. Obviously, that 1313 game, a lot of people thought, hey, this is going to be the comeback of LucasArts. But
did they have any, they had nothing to do with Force Unleashed, right?
No, they made Force Unleashed.
Yeah, those would count. Those aren't bad.
Yeah, they're not bad. I don't know. Yeah, they didn't develop any of the Lego Star Wars or anything, right? That's Traveler's Tales.
I believe so.
Yeah, and I think Traveler's Tales is probably continuing to make those games. Is that right?
I would assume so.
Yeah.
But
they're pretty popular, Lego games in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say Lego James Bond.
Oh, slip of the tongue.
Is a good prediction as the next
that is Lego game. A possibility.
That is actually... Look at that, Freudian slip, maybe?
Okay, so let's talk about a couple other things real quick here. Do we want to talk about this Nintendo Let's Play thing or not really? Does anybody have
I personally don't have a lot to say about it. Graham, do you got a...
No comment.
Huck City?
No, I don't really know too much about it, actually.
I don't watch Let's Plays.
I just think it's... I don't know where it came from. Like, from what I understand, I don't think they're outright blocking these videos, but they're somehow putting in like warnings on these videos, like essentially putting pressure on people not to use Nintendo games and Let's Play videos. It just doesn't make any sense. Like, this is only going to cause bad PR. I don't get it. I don't watch these videos, so I really don't care, but it's just not smart.
Maybe Nintendo they're trying videos. To equate it to like how you can't post TV shows on YouTube, which is essentially the exact same thing. Except the
huge interactive component of the game is missing.
True. But I mean, and you have running commentary along, which could be annoying or good depending on your viewpoint. But yeah, I mean, that is a good point. But at the same time, like, I know I have watched Let's Play videos of games that I don't have time to play and don't really, you know, want to go out and find and purchase. And they're a good way to see what that game is about, you know, see some cool things about it.
They're a good way to, if you're thinking about buying a game.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
And if you're stuck in a certain part of a game.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So what exactly is happening here? Like, what I heard was Nintendo is claiming royalties on views of these videos.
Yeah, I thought it was like they were imposing advertisements on them and claiming a portion of those.
So I guess, like, the moral question I have here is, like, for me, like, if I'm watching a music video on YouTube, I like it if the artist is getting a cut of that money, right? So now I'm watching like something that Nintendo's made on YouTube. It is kind of nice that Nintendo's getting a cut of that money. But it does kind of suck for the people who used to make a living off this stuff, like doing long playthroughs or speedruns or whatever. And now they're kind of getting cut out a bit of the equation.
People actually make a living doing that?
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's some really popular people who make their entire living off doing Let's Play videos.
We should get into that.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
We should definitely get into this.
Yeah, Sean, you should definitely post one a year.
Yeah.
Well, hey, if it's my job, I'll be playing a few more. But yeah. Well, okay. Then maybe if that's what it is, it's a little bit less. It's a little bit more of a gray area, I guess. But it's still like it's definitely being painted in a bad light by most people that are talking about it. And it just feels like these kinds of things that happen when people don't understand the technology and they just come in, you know, it's like Metallica with Napster or something, and then they just totally, people turn on them and they're going to regret it.
The way I thought I read it phrased was that they were actually taking down the videos, but that could have been just from what you maybe emailed around, Sean, not from any concrete source of any kind.
I can't remember what the story was that I actually posted, but they made it sound like they were flagging these videos in some way and not like blocking them outright, but there's some sort of system in YouTube where you can like sort of
claim ownership of the content or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not too sure, but yeah, I mean, these Let's Play videos are a pretty big deal. Like, they're, you know, like Graham said, there's people that have like millions of views on these things, and it's a part of gaming culture, and for Nintendo to kind of, like, people are basically saying, well, I'm not going to play Nintendo games now. And it's like, well, I don't know if they'll follow through with that, but that's a pretty bold statement to be making. So, okay. So Ouya, we don't know too much about this yet. Frank, you did Order
I'm
one.
Still awaiting my Ouya.
It hasn't arrived yet.
So they said they were going to ship the basic console with one controller. Those ones would go out first, and then they'd start doing the second controller ones, and then finally the version I ordered, the limited edition brown brush metal Ouya.
Of course, that's the one you ordered.
So
with his name engraved on the side.
So it'll be a while, I think, before I get mine. I'm hoping like I get one of the first ones of those, and then they run out of money, and mine's worth like a bajillion dollars. In my whole strategy, of,
didn't they make
of
eight and a half million dollars?
Hey, man, they've had to remanufacture a lot of controllers. I smell trouble in Ouya Town.
So
a lot of negative reviews.
I guess the thing that I had read, and I'm not sure if any of this has changed, but you know, the first people started getting some of theirs sent to them, and a few game sites wrote up reviews of these units and posted them, and they were pretty negative reviews. They did obviously say, hey, this is a work in progress, blah, 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 but as of right now, there's not much worth playing, and it's kind of clunky. And
it seems like the biggest thing that's being not promoted but discouraged is the idea of using the Ouya as a ROM box.
Right.
And it's like, we do not encourage this. Play, go buy people's newly created ROMs and use the Ouya for that. But they're really saying the Ouya is a cheap way to get a box on your TV that you can emulate anything. Let's be honest. That's pretty much what they're pushing.
Right.
And I think it's a great idea. That's what I'll use mine for.
So I guess,
but I have all the hard copies downstairs. It's just a convenient.
Backed up.
You're legit.
Well, that's your backup copy.
I'm a little less
of your cartridge.
Like the ROM concept, I don't see how the detriment of it that much. Especially depending on how old stuff is.
Are we actually about to go here? Oh boy.
I'm talking like 16-bit era stuff, NES. Like Nintendo's.
This is Nintendo's bread and butter, man. What are you doing?
Well, they're not selling those games anymore, right? They're not making dollars off those games.
They will be. Though.
I guess a virtual console.
That's true. That's true. I just bought Metroid for 30 cents.
Yeah. And I still continue to buy virtual console games that I like. It's just some games, there's no other way to play them than that way.
Earthbound was not available for many years.
If you're going to used markets, it's not like Nintendo's making money off that anyway. So I feel less ethically conflicted using older ROMs than maybe some people do.
I think a lot of people don't feel ethically conflicted. But so I have a couple questions about the whole Ouya thing. Like, first of all, did any of these negative early reviews, like, do you guys think that that's a bad sign for this console? And do you think it was wrong for them to be posting these reviews based on these early units? Because Ouya had kind of put out a statement soon afterwards saying these weren't for review. Why are people reviewing these things?
I have no real opinion, really. I mean, the Ouya in general, I mean, it's running on Android. I think Android phones are kind of slow and sluggish, are they not? So I don't know. I don't really have
that.
No. So
depends on the phone, probably.
Yeah, sure, I guess. But like the review that was posted on Game Junk's Facebook page, I watched it, and they basically said it can run games well. It's just that the interface right now is clunky. So, and they said the controller wasn't that great. Well, of course. I mean, I don't even want to know how much money Microsoft and Sony have sunk into designing their controllers. So I'm sure it's more than $8.5 million. So they really need to just mimic the Xbox controller and just maybe just even go to the same factory and be like, hey, we'll pay you $5 more and give me more of this or whatever. But I thought
they had a prolific designer design their controller, from what I remember from the Kickstarter.
There were some big names involved in the project. I don't know specifically who did the controller.
I don't care. Don't look it up.
I can look it up, Frank, if you want.
I couldn't give a shit.
I don't think I'll be picking up a new year, though, regardless. I mean, unless it sounds to me it's just going to have basically everything I can get on Steam right now, except I don't have to buy it. I mean, I know it's cheap. I know it's only like $100.
Yeah.
And I know they'll be improving the interface. So that really, the negative review is the interface doesn't really bug me. It would bug me if I owned it right now and was trying to use it, but it doesn't deter me from buying it. I'm already deterred, so.
It increases my odds of never opening a box. That's about it.
Any thoughts, Graham?
Yeah, I was kind of excited about the Ouya until I saw these initial reviews. It feels like maybe that they were kind of rushed at the end or something. They got it out a little bit earlier than they... If they had some more time, maybe things would have been a bit better. But I don't know. Like, it's a $100 console, right? So I don't know what people are really expecting. It's...
Yeah. I guess that's the problem, right? Like, it's sort of this open source thing, and people really love the idea of that. But then in their heads, they're comparing it to, you know, their Xboxes and their PlayStation 3s.
Yeah.
I do think that they're going to have trouble with the games themselves, like with the whole, you have to monetize in-game to make money. And, you know, if Farmville is any indication, it gets annoying that you are constantly getting bugged to, like, add your friends to do this or pay this to get further in the game.
It's like, called viralization, man. I know, get on board.
But I mean, it could be fine, but at the same time, it could be like the App Store right now, where it's just so flooded with tons of shit that you can't find anything. And you know, the only games you really find are the ones that go viral, that are already making, you know, the top tier money. And I mean, the reason they make the top tier money is because they do that, the viral in-game purchases really well. You can do in-game purchases really poorly too and make no money at all. I mean, I think I mentioned last show, like the average money that an iOS developer makes, like $2,000 on average, because you have these like Angry Bird guys that make tons, and then the regular guy that makes like $1. And it's just like, if you run into that on the Ouya, and I don't know how many people are going to actually bring good games to it. They're not going to spend tons of money to make this game for a, you know, a potentially pitfall of, you know, monetization.
Yeah, I think that's definitely... some big developers need to step up and sort of say, we're going to do something and, you know, make great games that's going to get people's attention. But until then, it's just going to be a interesting little homebrew experimental thing.
Yeah, or like ports of successful iOS games for now.
Right, yeah. Okay, well, I guess this might be a good lead-in then to our top five, which we've decided will be our top five game consoles of all time. Is Ouya on anybody's list at all? No?
If we had top six, it'd be on there.
All right, well, who wants to go first, starting at number five?
Let's have the guest go first.
I get to go first. All right. So my number five, I kind of went back and forth.
Tough decision.
And then when I came into Sean's studio here, I saw the Game Boy Advanced SP on his desk, and that kind of tipped the balance.
Sealed the deal.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm going for a GBA SP right here.
So,
really?
So yeah, we did decide that we're going to include portable consoles in this discussion,
yeah,
which I think is only fair. I think there's some great portable devices out there. Okay, well, let's see here. Let's take a look at my list.
What's Graham's fondest Game Boy SP memory?
I remember I went to Disney World on a road trip, and me and my friends, the whole time, we were just playing Advance Wars. The whole trip, like standing in the lineups for the roller coasters. It was amazing.
Best trip ever.
Good game.
As it turns out, my number five is also Game Boy Advance SP.
Oh,
whoa.
That's
right.
Spooky. It's interesting because I think if you want to talk about, you know, like a lot of consoles, portable or, you know, home consoles will release new versions and upgrades. And I don't think there's been a better upgrade than going from the original Game Boy Advance to this thing, which I love the design of it. I love how small it is. The backlit screen was like so, like, I can't even believe that people played the original Game Boy Advance without a backlit screen. And the thing I like too about this system is that this came out at a time when everybody was just pushing forward with, you know, 3D games, and that's all anybody wanted to play. And then this came out, and I was playing, you know, Mario Kart, you know, very similar to the Super Nintendo Mario Kart.
Metroid Fusion. Metroid Zero Mission.
It was actually the Castlevania 2D games that I really got into on this system. And
big
it
surprise.
Just reminded me that 2D gaming wasn't dead, and obviously it still isn't. So,
yeah. I never had a Game Boy Advance SP.
No?
I never had that or the Advance. I had the regular Game Boy, the Ridge. Also, I played a shit ton of Metroid 2 on that, too.
All right. My number five is a system that, for a long time, I would talk a lot of shit about.
Yep.
My friends had one of these systems, and, you know, we played it. We were kind of blown away at first, but bigger and better things came along. But over time, my nostalgia and appreciation and collecting for this system has skyrocketed, and some of the insane, ridiculous properties and games surrounding it have just found a very warm place in my heart. And that system is the Sega Saturn. Highly underrated system.
Big failure commercially, I believe.
Wasn't that the one that almost sunk Sega?
Yeah.
That was the last one, right?
Well, it probably pretty much did sink them in like the big in the grand scheme of things.
Put them out of the hardware game.
No, that was Dreamcast. But Dreamcast was like, they were riding so high that the Saturn took a lot of steam out there. But I don't know. I wish if it was just a little more powerful, a little more prepared for 3D, I think it could have been amazing.
Favorite Saturn game?
Favorite Saturn game? Probably Panzer Dragoon.
Okay.
Nice. What else? What else do I like? Knights? Yeah. Daytona?
Huge library.
Well, it's not that they're my favorite games. It's some of the ridiculous games like Bug 2, the Clockwork Knight games, Mr. Bones.
Mr. Bones. You're really preaching
these
Mr.
Guys,
Bones.
These guys are not vibing on Mr. Bones, I can tell you that much right now. But
the best thing about Mr. Bones was trying to watch you get it to work.
It's a pretty good game. And I mean, I haven't even played some of the other ones that are supposedly really good, like Panzer Dragoon Saga. Sonic R is terrible, but I still love it. That's the thing about Saturn. There's terrible games that I have this insane affection for just from having played them with my friends in high school.
So bad they're good?
Not even so bad they're good. So average they're amazing.
Either phrase. Okay. My number five is probably going to be higher on your guys' list, but I'm very late to this console. I haven't played it very much, but what I have played, I've been very impressed with, and that is the Nintendo DS. I believe Sean gave me that three-year-old, super old system, like a couple months ago.
With the name Lucas scratched into the case.
My Lucas system, that's right. and I've been playing a lot of it, actually. It's really, I actually played a game for it quite a bit for this episode, and yeah, it's just, I'm really impressed with the library, and I haven't even been able to scratch the surface of the games that are on it. So I'm sure it would be higher if I had got it earlier, if I was able to dive into the games more. But I recognize that it's a quality system.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. My number four is the original NES. That was my second console. My first one was actually Sega Master System. I got that at launch.
Wow.
But quickly I realized when I was going over all my friends' houses that the NES, like after a couple of years, the catalog grew and my parents eventually bought me an NES for Christmas, and that was a good time, kind of a turning point for me.
Nice.
I will have a very similar story. Yes. Kind of a little behind the times.
Shifted one generation.
So for my number four, I'm a little conflicted on this one. I think I'm going to make a substitution for what I had on here, but I'm going to tell you what was on here.
Well, we all know what your number one is, so...
Did he... I think he might put, like, iPhone on there. iOS.
Hey, you never know.
I'm walking out of here.
I think it's a guarantee.
We'll see.
I know it's number one.
Yeah,
of course you do.
But...
but we'll get to that. I had Dreamcast on my list in number four, but I think that's kind of unfair because I never had it when it actually was out. I got one much later. And I think it was way ahead of its time and all that stuff, but I don't feel right putting it on my list because I don't really have a personal connection with it. So I'm going to not put it on my list and leave it as an honorable mention. My number four, I'm going to put Nintendo 64.
Nice.
Maybe controversial for some. I didn't have a PlayStation 1 at this point in time, but this was the system that got me back into gaming because there was a period there where Super Nintendo came out.
Too cool for school?
Yeah, you're too cool. You're in high school.
I got too cool for gaming. Well, I played sports games and that was it. And I don't know. I just kind of lost interest for a while. And then the N64 with GoldenEye and what else was like
Mario Kart,
Ocarina of
Wayne
Time,
Gretzky, Star 3D
Fox
Hockey.
64.
Like just the way that they, totally set the standard for the way 3D games were going to be played. I mean, even if you think that the N64. The overall
revolutionary controller.
Yeah. Like even if you think that the overall crop of games wasn't amazing, there were a few landmark games on that system. So there you go.
I just realized I hadn't put it together, but my bottom three of my list are very telling. Number four, PlayStation 1, same generation as Saturn, slightly better in my opinion. My heyday of gaming in high school. Again, awesome games, the beginning of 3D. Again, weird, fucked up games like Loaded. Like weird first party games that never.
Based on the Metallica album?
No,
or?
It was actually Popolita itself did the music.
Nice.
On a top down shooter. Just awesome, weird 3D games. Jumping Flash, I loved when it came out. It was this only. I bought this instead of Saturn because it launched with Mortal Kombat 3, which was a huge deal for me. And I got into Tekken, tons of other new franchises, which it opened a whole new world of gaming to me. And I still have fond memories of turning my PS1 upside down to play Resident Evil when I thought it was broken forever. It was when there was no internet, my PS1 stopped working. I had nothing to do, and I can't remember. I think it might have been in a Game Players magazine or a Die Hard Game Fan. It said, "Turn your PS1 upside down, and it'll work again." And I did that. And it was
whew, magical.
Bought Vigilante 8 the next day. That's it for me.
Right. My number four, like Dwyer, I also didn't have a PS1. So when I bought this console, the PS2. I also played all the PS1 games that I had missed out on. I had a PS2 when I was in university, and so I played a ton of PS2 games and PS1 games, and just the library of PS2 games is so huge. There's so many good titles to play. Like I think Shadow of the Colossus. Is that right?
Yeah. That is correct.
Yeah, I think that game will go down as like one of the best for a long time. And, you know, games like that really blew me away. Because I was kind of like Dwyer. I kind of had taken a step back from games for a while. And this was my first, like...
You were too cool.
I was way too cool. This is like my first real jump back into a hardcore gaming platform. And I think games like that really, really showed off, you know, what the PlayStation could do. And I didn't have a Saturn or whatever else was on. Oh, Xbox, I guess, was the other time. But my roommate did. So, I mean, we were fully loaded at our place.
I believe it has the most units sold out of any system.
I think so,
yeah.
I think I looked that up. 155. I think I saw that today, actually. 155 million.
Whoa. There you go. All right, number three.
All right, number three is Xbox 360.
Ooh.
Yeah, so Xbox 360, I think, really changed a lot of things, like in the gaming landscape. Like they introduced Xbox Live Arcade, they introduced achievements in GamerScore, friends lists, and I spent a lot of time downloading Xbox Live Arcade games. Like after this console came out, not to mention they had a lot of really great franchises on that console as well. Like played a lot of Gears of War, the Halo games. Good console.
I would agree. Okay, my number three is the Nintendo Entertainment System, which is, I mean, what can you say? It's
the
classic.
Nintendo Entertainment System.
It's, I mean, yeah, it was just one of those things. You know, everybody in the neighborhood had one. Games like Blades of Steel instantly sold me.
You're such a sports guy.
With the,
I'm always going on with the sports.
Bo Jackson.
The voice of the announcer had like five different words he could say, but it was amazing.
Well,
the
only one you needed was fight.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, it's amazing, and it's the system that everyone
bad dudes
goes back to with fond memories.
Well, maybe not me. So
Apparently not.
It's not on my list.
Not me either.
Again, I was my number three is Nintendo 64, which means my bottom three were all from the same generation. I didn't really realize that at first, but Nintendo 64, classic system. I remember waiting outside Walmart at 6 a.m. on that fateful Sunday. Me and two of my friends, and we got in there, and the manager, or they didn't have them out. And we didn't think we were going to get one.
Did you lose your shit on them? Or
no, my mom did. And, it was pretty awesome. She really reamed out the manager and got us all our systems and a free $50 gift certificate to Walmart. So,
oh, look at this guy. That's a game.
Do not mess with my mom.
Mama Knezich.
But yeah, a lot of fond memories of that system. Mario 64, Banjo-Kazooie. Holy fuck.
just the rare titles alone.
The rare. Oh my god! What a system. We've mentioned a lot of them already, but definitely a peak for Nintendo. Well, maybe not. It's up there though.
Well, as many people would say, that's where they started to lose their dominance.
I would say, yeah,
but
it's the former high point,
the plateau.
It's all been downhill from there.
My number three, also the Nintendo 64, and I mean just. Piggyback on what Frank just said. I mean, great games. Wayne Gretzky 3D Hockey, probably my best, most recent memory.
Now we're getting to the real reason.
I look forward to playing some more in the future as well.
So do I, without Sean
nattering
bringing me down ahead of time.
Well, you need a proper warm-up next time.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, even just, like, Super Mario 64 was probably the first game I played, and that game was probably the first good-looking 3D game I ever played. I think I had played some PlayStation games, but they were pretty polygonal.
It was so smart in its simplistic art style.
Yeah.
Like, not complicating things with... It was so sparse, but visually unique. It was amazing art design in that game.
I think that was the first game I remember to... Like, wanting to explore that castle and, you know, find the nooks and crannies. And they always would put, like, coins in like weird spots that you knew they put there just so people would explore to find them, and I don't know, I think they just did a really good job.
I remember losing my shit the first time I saw a screenshot of Metal Mario. Holy.
That's it for me. That's good enough.
All right, what are we on? Number
two.
My number two is the PS3.
Whoa.
So if you had asked me a couple of years ago, this would have been reversed with the Xbox 360, but Sony has, I don't know, they've done a really great job of like updating the console, like just constantly improving it. Like the XMB, I think, is way better than what it was before. Well, maybe not the new store. I'm not really a big fan of that, but like all the trophy stuff that they're doing is really awesome. My PS3 is backwards compatible with PS2, and I've never had a PS2, so I was actually able to go back and play a ton of games that I've never played before, like Ico and Shadow of the Colossus and the God of War games, and I don't know, the Uncharted franchise, I love it. I don't know, I just think right now this generation for me, the PS3, while at first was kind of like a step below, is now like skyrocketed, and it's my favorite console. Yeah.
Well, I'm with you on that sentiment. Xbox 360 is still number two on my list, and I think you hit the nail on the head with everything you said before. I mean, I think for me, this generation, PS3 has kind of slowly overtaken it for me, and I actually prefer playing on the PS3 now. But I think the Xbox 360 did so many things right initially, with the exception of all the overheating, red ring, dying systems. But I think, yeah, like the Xbox Live initially came out with the first Xbox, but I think they upgraded everything so much, like introduced so many more features, and everybody copied it after that. Yeah. And the controller, I think, is my favorite game controller of all time. Just putting it out there.
Bart, wow, it's really interesting, because I have very interesting sentiments to both of you, and my number two is the PS3.
Yeah.
But what it comes down to is, I agree with Graham. I was really torn on the idea that, really, Xbox had a lot of the ingenuity in terms of live arcade, just friends lists,
achievements.
But then Sony's so good at letting other people make stuff up and doing it better. And I feel a lot of their franchises are like that. And then just trophies I like more than achievements. What was the first thing I said? This was
Xbox Live Arcade.
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned, PSN games are way better now.
Yeah.
And they actually have some.
Yeah. And I like, to me, they eclipse them. Super Stardust HD, Dead Nation, same developer. I probably should have diversified a bit there. But, so Guacamelee in the mix. A couple, what are my other favorites? Just some of the HD remakes on there. Okami. There's just so much good stuff on there. And they, like, I remember seeing Uncharted. Uncharted took the shooting elements of Gears of War and the cover system, kind of intermixed it with Tomb Raider and some other games, but just took it to a whole nother level. They're so good at seeing what works and making it as good as it can be. And all my favorite exclusive franchises are on PS3. God of War, Uncharted, like I already said, Infamous, Killzone. I mean, Halo is the one that's really the thing that brings me back to Xbox the most, aside from Nintendo stuff. But I don't know. To me, when you're looking at Xbox versus PS3, it is no longer even close. And a huge factor, as Graham said, is the XMB is so much better than...
especially now, since they've upgraded.
Gotten so
I don't know where anything is.
It's gotten so ridiculous and so marketing and Windows 8-based. It's just vomit-inducing. And I really
give... if I want to pay for an ad, I know exactly where to find it.
Yeah, I give PS3 so much credit for just... that cross-media bar has been around since the PSP. And they nailed it like right out of the gate, and it's perfect. I hope they don't fuck with it too much in the future.
There's also PlayStation Plus versus Xbox Gold. Like
PlayStation Plus is amazing,
hands down.
Yeah.
It's not even a contest, really.
Yeah.
I think it's... well, I'm just going to jump in there. 360 is not on my list.
One more thing I need to say. Sorry, all the PS3's ability to use just generic USB peripherals, not proprietary stuff, like embracing the whole world of hardware and accessibility so smart. Bluetooth, like not having any of their own versions of wireless controllers and stuff like that. Like, they're so good.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's the one, like, I really like a lot of the games the 360 brings, but I couldn't put it on my list as, like, favorite console just because of all the fucking nickel and diming they do. Like, I wanted wireless. I have to pay $100. I want a bigger hard drive. I got to pay $100. I want to play online, $50 a year.
Yeah.
I want to get a demo, $50 a year. Like, just stupid shit that PSN gives you for free. And what is, you pay $50 a year to Sony, what do they give you? Games. Tons of games.
I think the wireless thing is the biggest thing. And that was, you know, they came out before the PS3, and I think they made a mistake there. They wanted to keep the price lower.
The Wii had goddamn built-in Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Let me clarify one thing, because when we're talking the war versus Xbox versus PS3, I think we're focusing a little too heavily on firmware and software that's associated with the system, when I think the true test of longevity of a system is the games that are on it. So that being said, I still think the games on PS3 are way better in general than the Xbox 360.
But I'm with you. Like, Halo, amazing. You can't beat Halo. It's one of the best shooters. But I do find that PS3 has more like diversity in their games, whereas I find Xbox is so tailored to shooters and that like teen shooter Call of Duty fan that, you know, I mean, other than some of the good indie games they've had, I can't really think off the top of my head of a non-shooter quality game that they've come out with. It's all been Gears of War, Call of Duty, well, I guess not Call of Duty, Halo. I don't know, can anyone think of a non-shooting Xbox title exclusive?
Viva Pinata.
That's what I was going to say.
Well, that's awesome. I love that game. Yeah. So maybe I'll put 360 up there because of that. But anyways, my number two is the Super Nintendo. And, you know, I wake up every morning and want to play an RPG, so it's the perfect system for me. And I just love it. Tons of games. Super Mario World, classic platformer. I remember I got that system super late. I had a Sega Genesis, and then one fateful summer, as Frank said, with the faithful, I broke my collarbone right at the beginning of the summer, and my mom felt bad for me, so she bought me a Super Nintendo. Couldn't have gotten any better. I sat on my ass all summer and played tons of games because there's a huge library. And, you know, like, I remember one of the games that came with my system was Star Fox, which people shat on because it had, you know, these really polygonal graphics. But for the time, it was pretty cutting edge. The gameplay was really fun once you kind of figured it out. And there's just so many games on that system that are so much fun to play, even today.
I guess the one thing I would say that puts the Super Nintendo over the NES in some sense is that you can still play Super Nintendo games without too much trouble, whereas the NES is, you know, if you have an NES and you buy used games, most of the time it's a struggle to get them to work.
Sure, yeah.
So, all right, we're down to number one.
All right, my number one is Super NES.
Whoa. Yeah. Does anybody have Genesis? I'm hoping there's a Genesis in here somewhere, because otherwise people are going to be mad at us.
Are you? Maybe I don't know your number one.
I don't know. Maybe you don't.
I know his. Maybe. I thought it was going to be Commodore 64.
So did I.
But it's not. It's going to be PS3, I think.
Wait, it's Commodore 64.
I think it's Super Nintendo.
I don't know about that.
It's obviously Super Nintendo.
I don't know.
Look at this. The mystery.
I think we all have Super Nintendo, except for you.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, like, for me, that's probably the console I played more than any other console, Super Mario World. I played that game so much. Like, probably one of the best launch games of all time. And, yeah, I don't know. I still go back to the well occasionally. Like, last week, I downloaded on my Wii U, I downloaded a couple of SNES games because there's nothing to play on the Wii U. So.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I did the same, and, like, I played Super Metroid for an hour, and I was like, this is the best game ever made.
That game will stand the test of time forever. Yeah. So,
well, my number one, maybe somebody's mentioned it already. It's a little system called the Commodore 64. Which I know it's kind of cheating, but I think it's worth mentioning just because, you know, everybody credits the NES for saving the game industry after Atari totally destroyed it.
But no, it was the Commodore.
But I mean, let's face it, the home computer market was what kept games alive for a while there. And I mean, there's just so many games, so many weird ass crazy games. And I don't think anybody used it for anything other than games. So
I didn't.
There you go.
My number one, and it's a landslide, it's not even close, Super Nintendo. Best system. I was such a denier. I had a Genesis. I thought it was good. And I would still go over to my buddy Eric's place and beg to play Super Mario World. And then one game came along that changed everything. The ultimate game changer, as far as I'm concerned, is Donkey Kong Country.
I knew he was gonna say that.
Which I saw that and I'm like, who am I kidding? It's time to face facts, Frank. Your system's a piece of garbage. You need a Super Nintendo. And I had to get it, and I got one shortly thereafter. And, I mean, we have...
Mom went down to Walmart and yelled?
The best Mega Man game ever. Well, Mega Man 2 is pretty good, but I love Mega Man X. Love it.
Yeah, it's a classic.
So many amazing platformers. Super Metroid, probably the best game ever made. Super Mario World, probably my favorite Mario game. Link to the Past.
Oh, yeah.
Think of how many of those games came out in the first 6 months of that system.
Think of how many of those games.
That's insane, though. Yeah. Like, I mean, when you think of what these new consoles are going to launch with, it's going to be nothing.
And then even thinking to the downswing of the console with Mario World 2, Yoshi's Island. I don't know. It's...
Well, think about how many of those games you will go back to and play all the time.
I put them in my Super Nintendo.
Tons. And I was thinking about this the other day. Like, you look at PlayStation, and some of those games are really good, but the 3D was so raw.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. Like, to me, like, Super Nintendo isn't on my list because I didn't play a ton of Super Nintendo games, but I think the reason why you guys all think of these games so fondly is because they're 2D at the top of its form with, like, the best graphics that 2D games had to offer before 3D started coming in. And I think those early 3D games, you can't go back and play them now. They're just, they don't hold
That's
up.
That's definitely true for Tomb Raider 1. But I don't know so much because I think a lot of, there's 2D games that come out now on, you know, PSN or other arcade type platforms, and I still don't think they're as good just gameplay wise as a lot of those Super Nintendo games. So I'm gonna have to disagree with you there, Sean. And even the 2D Super Mario Brothers that have come out on Wii and Wii U, not as good as Super Mario World, not even close.
Yep.
Super Mario World.
Point taken.
We haven't even... you mentioned RPGs, but Chrono Trigger, some would argue.
Yeah.
The best RPG
Final
ever
Fantasy
made.
4 and 6.
Just a slew of great games out there for the... Uniracers. Oh.
Mario Kart?
Man. It's okay. No.
It's okay. Give me a break.
It's awesome.
Did you just go?
Yeah, I'm done.
Oh, okay. My number one... Let the fanboy begin. PS3. Bam. Really what put me over for this, though.
In 20 years from now, are you going to look back and say PS3 is the best?
Yes. I will be returning to Uncharted all the time.
Oh, that's true.
I will not. I mean, I've gone back and played Uncharted multiple times since beating it. I think that series will stand the test of time. I mean, I love Mass Effect on the Xbox. Some people probably go back to that quite a bit.
But now that's on the PS3 too. So
yeah.
No, like.
So I think this console generation is kind of cross. Like, this is where the 3D became good enough where you can probably go back at any time and replay these games, and the graphics will hold up, the controls will hold up because they didn't have to, you know, whatever, deal with camera issues, right? Because of the DualShocks. So I don't know. There's just so many good games on the PS3, especially the PSN. I mean, I don't know how many games I have constantly in my PSN list. PS Plus has basically opened tons of games I never would have played. Like, I just played Spec Ops The Line through PlayStation Plus, and, like, I was amazed at how good that game was. And I never would have played it unless I got it through PlayStation Plus. And that's a game I could see myself going back to, maybe not as often as Uncharted, but still stands up. I think it would stand up for a while, maybe not. It's just not well known. I don't know. Just PS Plus. PS3.
For N64, you never mentioned one of your favorites. Beetle Adventure.
Oh, yeah. That's probably one of the best, like, kart racing. And Diddy Kong.
Racing, oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, kart racing was alive and strong on the N64.
Yeah, sure was.
Not as good as the original Mario Kart, though.
No, better.
Okay. Anybody have any honorable mentions? I feel like there's got to be something that's...
No,
I almost said PS Vita is my number 5.
I almost mentioned that as well.
I'll give it an honorable mention to the Xbox 360.
I mean, there's just not enough games yet, but I think it's an amazing system, and I think it's going to get there. But
yeah, Xbox 360 for me, honorable, since it wasn't on my list. But
okay,
What would be honorable?
Genesis, since no one had it on their list.
Neo Geo, nobody mentioned that.
No, I'm trying to think if I'm missing a section of games on my wall. You know what?
TurboGrafx.
I'm going to say GameCube.
Interesting.
I hate to be...
Doesn't get a lot
so
of love.
So nostalgic about it. I gave a serious thought to putting all Nintendo systems on my top 5, but in the interest of diversity, I switched it up. But GameCube, I think, has a lot of great first-party games and should not be neglected. I think it's kind of... gone into the recesses of people's minds, and that's the biggest mistake you'll ever make. Just remember that.
All right. Write that down.
Oh, I forgot Wave Race 64 for Nintendo 64. Holy shit.
All right, so let's move on and talk about some games we've been playing. I actually don't have a ton to talk about here, so I'll let you guys do most of the talking.
Okay.
What
Well, I think Graham and I have played some similar stuff. And I also have not played a lot. I've focused a lot of time into specific games and trying to complete them 100% and platinum them, etc., etc. So, Graham, why don't you start?
I did the exact opposite of Frank. I tried to play as many games as possible and just get through them. I guess I'm not going to talk about everything I played, but some of the ones that might be more interesting to talk about, Bioshock Infinite...
Which I platinumed.
So it took me a while to get through this game because I hit a point in it where I was just like, I felt like I was just replaying BioShock, and this might be. I think everyone
should do a lot of backtracking.
No, but
there's way less backtracking.
It was mostly the combats and the feeling of the of the setting. Like, I mean, the setting is very different, but the feeling of the universe was very similar for me. And I kind of forced myself to get through it because I kept hearing like all this super positive press about the game and how the ending was amazing and all this stuff. And I don't know. I just, for me, it just didn't click with me, and I was kind of just let down by the way everything turned out. And I think I'm like one of the only people that felt like that. But I like to hear Frank's opinion.
Wow. I will say this. When I played the game on normal, I thought that the salts and was way... I like that they named them unique things, but I felt I used them hardly at all playing on normal. I was shooting everything and was not using it to the same extent I used plasmids.
The salts are and magic, motion. Right?
Well, what are they actually called?
I can't remember what they're called, but
I just know I need salts to use them.
I got like two really good ones, and then I just stuck with one of them and just used it repeatedly. It seemed to work almost always.
Yeah, I was just shooting everyone, and I really liked it. I thought I love the world. I love the reskinning of BioShock, and I thought it was different enough for me to get through it. It didn't feel like a chore. I didn't think it's kind of, I don't know if we want to get into spoilers or not, but I'll say there's an interdimensional aspect that, while I liked it, I don't think it was on point enough to, I don't think it makes perfect sense. I don't think you can ever do a game like that and have it wrap up perfectly.
Yeah, I had problems with that.
So I liked the scope of the concept and the inspiration behind it, particularly how it lent itself to the name BioShock Infinite. I was like, what's this name mean? Why is it important? And I think that meaning is there. And I liked, why can't I think of her name? The main girl character.
Elizabeth.
Yeah, I thought she was really well done. And I liked it for the most part. Now, I went back and played it on 1999 mode to get the platinum, and that was quite difficult, and without a few exploits I doubt I would have done it, but I think I did find it more enjoyable on that difficulty, having to use more strategies
because the combat was better.
Yeah, and I definitely had to exploit my powers more.
What's 1999 mode?
It's like harder than hard mode.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I agree with like a lot of the things that you liked about the game. Like, the environments were beautiful. Elizabeth was an awesome character. But I just felt like it was really repetitive for me. I didn't like the rail stuff that they had. Like, I know that was a big thing that they were showing initially, but like combat with the rails, I really didn't like it. I was always like, I don't know where I am. I don't know where the enemies are. Like, finding myself confused.
Yeah, I found it again. Obviously, being more familiar with the environments, I liked it on my second playthrough more.
Yeah.
But the songbird was an image that I loved leading up to the game, and I felt that was kind of underutilized. I guess it's almost like the shark in Jaws. If you show it too much, it kind of loses its impact, but it's so they're walking a line there. I don't know. I say I would like to have seen more of that, or maybe have a little more interaction with that, but I don't know. I still like the idea of the songbird, and I don't want to say too much without completely ruining the game for people, but there's some callbacks towards the end, which I liked as well. And I don't know. I just thought it was a pretty decent single player experience for me. I like BioShock 2. A lot of people didn't like BioShock 2. So I'm probably a bigger fan of the BioShock universe. And I definitely
really
enjoy it.
Is it groundbreaking? Is it like, you know, the best game you've ever played?
No. In fact, the next game I think we're going to talk about, I preferred to BioShock Infinite.
I think we might agree on this.
So I played, actually, just to jump in on
this. The next two games I played, I preferred to BioShock Infinite.
I played the one-hour PSN trial of BioShock Infinite, so I can't really comment on the story because I obviously didn't experience it.
They don't have it at the library yet?
No, it's not the library yet. It will be fun someday, maybe. I found that, like you guys said, Irrational knows how to craft a world really well, like just going in there. So I was basically rushing through as fast as I could, trying to avoid as much combat as possible. And even though I avoided like 90% of the combat, I found that the best part of that game was when I was not fighting. And I found that the combat almost seems completely out of place in the game they're trying to make.
Well, I would agree in that I think there's too many gunfights. I think it could have dealt with less.
I think it would be better as an adventure game. No combat at all.
Yeah, I think some... I like the combat in general. I just... There was times, especially... I love the scene in the... I think it's against Comstock. No, not Comstock. The General.
Yeah, okay.
When you're going into all the different, like, Disney ride areas. Yeah,
that was pretty cool.
I loved it. I could have dealt with a little less waves of enemies. I think so just a tone back on the enemies a bit more, and I think it would have hit a perfect sweet spot for me.
All right. Graham, continue.
Okay. Well, I played Tomb Raider pretty much the same time as I played BioShock, like playing them in parallel to each other.
I 100% at Tomb Raider and then moved directly onto to BioShock.
Tomb Raider, I thought was a great game.
I thought Tomb Raider was absolutely fucking amazing.
Yeah. It's hard not to compare this game to Uncharted. And I think it does a lot of things better than Uncharted. I think Uncharted has better, like, the storyline of Uncharted is stronger. The character acting and stuff was strong. The characters are stronger in Uncharted. But the gameplay, I thought, in Tomb Raider was amazing. Like, all the side mission stuff, like, going, the exploration stuff. It's kind of a weird, partially open world. Like, everything's connected, but...
I would almost... kind of a little more compartmentalized version of Arkham City.
Yes.
And, the collectible structure and stuff like that. It's perfect.
Yeah, it's really well done. It's like, they call it gear gating, but it's like the similar Metroidvania style of game where you're getting new equipment that allows you to get into new parts of the world and stuff. And I really like that, all that aspect of it. The puzzles were really well done. Like, a lot of the level design was fantastic. And the combat I really enjoyed too. I never got tired of it.
Hunting, I loved.
The hunting was really cool. Yeah, yeah.
To me, design-wise, it's almost flawless. And... an aspect you're talking about there, the idea of the puzzle, like puzzles, right? They clearly separate where the game is puzzles, where it's action, where it's exploration. It's, you're never confused as to what you should be doing. So going into one of the hidden tombs, you know, it's a single articulate puzzle that you have to solve. And that to me is so brilliant. And then you know, when there's no enemies around, you're in exploration mode. You're using all your tools to find things. And then there's obviously combat sections, boss sections, kind of quick timey sections, but I would say really well done, quick time, interactive kind of stuff.
It kind of feels like you're open to go wherever you want, but you never feel lost and you always know where you're supposed to go next. And some of the environments were really cool, like a lot of varied environments.
I played a little bit of this game, like maybe an hour, hour and a half, I'd say. And the one thing, like, I really liked it and I really want to get back to it. But the one thing is that hint of the open world kind of turned me off a little bit. Like, I don't know if I just, you know, didn't spend quite enough time with it to sort of, you know, figure out where the limits of the world were. And I just felt like at first it seemed linear, and then I kind of got into the area where it seemed a little more open, and I did feel a little bit lost. And then I kind of thought, I don't know, I could see this turning me off if I don't.
I think it scales pretty well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's,
I'm dying to play this game, actually.
It's pretty amazing. I would say it's definitely the best game I played last year. It would have been my game of the year last year had I played it last year. And the characters look awesome. Laura looks awesome. She's actually an attractive female lead. Like,
did it come out that long ago?
No, it came out March.
Oh, okay.
But just the idea, like, there's all these... Even the idea of the old Laura Croft is kind of a joke, and what female protagonists can be, and... she's a very good example of one. I would say the weakest part would be the story, and the motivations for some of the villains. Yeah. But it doesn't, honestly, the game doesn't get caught up in that stuff too much. It kind of takes it with a grain of salt. And I mean, it's kind of story heavy at the beginning and the end, but in between, it's small, digestible pieces.
That's the only thing I really didn't like about it, too, is the story kind of gets a little bit supernatural at some point, and like, I didn't really buy it, but I guess it's not abnormal for a Tomb Raider game to be.
Didn't Uncharted 2 do that?
Yeah, every Uncharted kind of does that, too. Yeah. So if you're modeling yourself after that, that definitely comes to the only thing, only negative of the game, I would say, is the Chatterbox trophy.
Which one is that?
You have to talk to all these, like, weird one-off conversations.
Oh,
and you have to get them all in one playthrough. And if you...
You can't go you, back.
But if you do things in a wrong order, you have to... I started the game four times.
Oh, no.
And then...
I'm not digging that.
Well, you don't have to get it, but if... You
know, yeah.
I have to get it. So that was the only really frustrating thing I can say.
I would have gone back and got all the collectibles, except that some of them don't show up on your map. Like, there's those special ones in each area that don't show up, and that always annoys me. Like,
yeah, I'm with you there. There's no reason.
Yeah.
We can all look up stuff on the internet.
Yeah.
There's no reason not to mark collectibles in a game. Completely agree. Like orbs in a Metroidvania style game.
Exactly.
I think it'll be a real shame. I think it'll be a real shame if a game like this, or the studio, I can't remember the studio that made this game, doesn't get to make another game like this because of all the money stuff that's going on related to this game. Have you guys heard about that? Where Square Enix, like, way overestimated how much sales this game would make, and it's come under that.
Yeah.
And so now they look horrible to their investors, and, like, I don't know how it's going over, but it seems stupid to me that a game could be so good, but sell, I think they wanted 7 million sales, and they only got 4.5, which is really good. And but because they said to their investors it'll sell 7, now they look like they are not doing well. Really, they must have made money on 4.5 million sales. They just didn't make as much money. So, like, it would be a real shame if they pulled the plug because of that. But,
well, I mean, that's happening to a lot of games, right? Like, I think I don't know if I've heard exact numbers for BioShock, but I don't think that's been selling as well as they thought it would either. Could be wrong.
I don't know.
But yeah, it's just weird that all these huge games came out early this year, and it just feels like everyone's kind of waiting for the next consoles or something. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, the only other thing I would add about Tomb Raider is that the shooting the bow is amazing.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
Okay. So anything else for you, Graham?
Yeah, I'll just go through some of these quickly. One game that I really enjoy playing was Antichamber. It's been a long time since I've... Like, I love first-person puzzle games, like Portal, like, kind of blew me away when I first played it. And I haven't felt like that about a game since Portal until I played Antichamber. It's, like, a really short game, but if you like solving puzzles, it's, like, it's one of those games that throws you in. They don't explain anything about the world, and you have to try and figure everything out. And the rules of this world are really wacky, and so...
It was my mind fuck of the month on the last episode, so there you go.
Yeah, so well deserved. I play this cool game on Android. I guess it's also on iOS, called The Room, which is also a puzzle game.
I've seen the screenshot, the title screen, in a lot of things, but I've never played it.
It's a great game. It's like basically you're given a puzzle box, and you have to try and figure out how to open the box. Like, there's like different contraptions and stuff, and then inside of that box, there's another box, and it has more complicated puzzles, and you just kind of work your way down through these puzzles.
It's like an upgraded version of Curiosity.
it's basically Curiosity, except much shorter.
Wait, did they solve that yet?
It's close.
I think it's close.
I thought it was supposed to happen with the Microsoft.
I thought it was under 50.
Last time I saw it was on 18 layers. That was a couple days ago.
Oh.
So maybe E3. Maybe they're aiming for E3 now.
Maybe.
I think they just keep adding layers.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely controlled in some way. Like,
no, there's numbers now. You can see what layer they're on.
Really?
So, yeah.
The countdown is on?
Yeah. Hmm. There's even a big countdown in the background when you're in there. So, like, the estimated time, I guess. Another really cool thing that I played is called Candy Box. Have you guys tried this game?
No.
I've heard of it.
Candy Box. Just go to Google, type Candy Box, click the first result, and you'll be playing Candy Box. It's like an in-browser JavaScript game.
This is like Frog Fractions.
That's the game I would compare it most to, because Frog Fractions, you think it's something and then it changes and then
these
it changes
guys,
again.
These guys hated Frog Fractions, Graham.
Really?
They hated it.
We didn't hate it.
We just didn't get it.
this is more of a true... I would say Candy Box is an RPG, but when you first go in there, you don't know what you're doing, and it's pretty cool to play around with it. Yeah, that's all I really want to talk about.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Do you want me to go?
Dirty Frank. Go okay. for it.
Next on the list, Guacamelee.
Oh.
Excellent.
I also play this game.
I did too.
Now, I will say this. I got Guacamelee the day it came out, and I was playing it for 4 hours, and up until the Jaguar boss fight, I thought it was literally a perfect game. Like, it is amazing. It's many games have tried to recreate a Metroid-style game, and I actually thought Guacamelee did it perfectly, putting its own...
butter him up a little more.
I'm being honest. I would be saying that.
He's saying the nice stuff first.
I would be saying that even if he wasn't here. And I thought all the presentation stuff was amazing. I think the combat has such an awesome rigid feel, and the like making your own combos makes perfect sense. It doesn't feel loose at all. There's good delays on all the hits, and I think it could even be comparable to a lot of 2D fighters. A lot of the design elements that went into the fighting mechanics, and I think it's the best Metroid style game I've played in a long time. And I think a lot of people in reviews that I've seen have been talking about the difficulty really ramping up, and I don't think it gets that difficult. I would say there's one teensy thing I would change, and it would be the time delays between boss enemy attacks. Because they're a little random, and I feel I would get into chains where I couldn't even get up, and I was getting hit again.
Yeah.
And
I found that on hard, especially.
You're actually, that's a good point. We're actually trying to fix that right now.
Yeah?
So, yeah.
It is now a perfect game.
That's the only thing I would say. Yeah. The delays between attacks to where I couldn't even react to them, and I didn't feel it was my fault versus the game.
I get the problem with that one is in defense of it. Like,
yeah.
If you roll when you come out, like right away, that's how you can escape, but not everyone gets that. Like, so when we were playtesting internally and stuff, we never really had the problem, but we see a lot of people having that problem. So we're playing around with those numbers now.
Yeah. And really, I would say even the last boss fight, not the two stage one.
Yeah.
The first stage is a little tougher, but the Jaguar one was the one that maybe it was just the biggest increase to me. But I even on hard mode, I didn't think it was terribly, terribly annoyingly difficult. I thought it was pretty fair, and I did use the roll a lot. And with a lot of, I'm sure people snap about some of the rooms with the beam enemies.
Yeah, I was snapping a little bit on those,
but I got used to those, and
those guys are tough.
For me, it's it is difficult, and it's more difficult than the blob games.
Yeah.
But it's like right at the right level for me anyway. Like, cause it's stuff that you can kind of keep doing it over and over again without like the checkpoints are well done, I think. So, and even with, there was something I was stuck on at one point, and then I just came back like a day later and I did it like on my first try. So it's something where it's like, you feel like you're making progress, and then you know what you have to do. It's just a matter of executing.
Yeah, and the platforming elements using the combat, like the different special moves to go around things, and that stuff is amazing. And the idea, this is one thing that frustrated, that I was very aware of in Guacamelee after playing Super Metroid again. There's so many puzzles or like hidden things you encounter in Guacamelee that you can get the first time you see them. It's not, there's not too many things. Oh, I can't get that now. There'll be an area you can't get to, but it'll never be an item that I see that I can't get.
Yeah.
And it's usually, if I can see it, chances are I have what I need to get that now. And I don't spend 10 minutes trying to get something I can't get.
You just need to figure out the puzzle.
Yeah. And I thought they were perfect difficulty level. That's kind of where I see like Drinkbox is getting better and better at design stuff. So pretty excited about that. I like, it's tough playing someone you know when you know them playing their game, and this was not a tough one to play. It was amazing.
Thanks.
And it would have been, it's definitely would be in the top three games I've played this year, but it could have been number one. maybe with the patch it'll be even closer.
All right,
but I could have been wrong before too when I was made that little jab about the orbs, because it might be I'm not in areas where the orbs are yet. They might show up that as an empty circle on the map once you're in the area.
The orbs are intentionally well hidden.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I couldn't believe I found the one in Guac's house.
Okay.
Like the by switching dimensions. Yeah. I was just fucking around in there and I found, like, I'm amazing. How'd I find that?
Well, I also played it, though I don't know. Like, I didn't really develop this game, so although I was there, I didn't really have a big hand in doing it. So I got it. Well, I got it the day before it came out. Way better than you. So, I mean, I played it a ton, like Frank was saying also, and just the same thing. I'm so impressed with what the team put together in this game, because it is really fun to play. It's just fun to play. Platforming so good. The puzzles are so good.
Like I was saying, if it wouldn't have been for like that frustration, I would have played this game beginning to end and probably started a second run in the same day.
I think the most I was frustrated was in the tree special area to get the orb tree, the tree
yes,
orb.
Yes, yes.
That platforming is extremely challenging.
I haven't gotten that yet.
Okay, so I'm also one trophy away from my platinum of this game, which is
one?
The
four combo moves in one.
Yeah, yeah, like the six without touching the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know where a good spot to try that out would be.
The tunnel going down. Most people say on hard.
I do it in the combo chicken house.
Yeah,
yeah.
Combo chicken. Is there any combo chicken that like kind of sets it up for that?
No.
It's like one or two moves away.
That you know, that guy, no, Poncho is his name. Yeah. You can do it on Poncho. He's invincible, right? So you can just keep trying and you don't have to worry about.
Oh, spoiler.
He doesn't have to. He never fights back.
That is an inside tip. I don't know if I've heard that anywhere.
Right from the source.
Yeah. Exploits.
Yeah. But that one tree orb area, if you haven't gotten there, you may be frustrated there also, yeah, because
I'm pretty good at platforming.
It's
yeah, we wanted to.
It's very challenging, but I mean, it's a good type of challenging where every time you die, you progress a little more. The only other time I got frustrated was in, I can't remember what dungeon it is, but the one where there's like a ton of little platforms that you have to jump around.
Yeah.
And I found I would get close to the top and then I would just get hit. And I'd drop, and instead of dying, I would land on like one of the bottom platforms and then have to make my way all the way back up. Whereas as I'm falling, I'm just like, please don't hit anything. Please don't hit anything.
Oh, that's the worst. You hit something when you don't want to hit
yeah,
something.
Yeah. So, but other than that, I mean, I loved everything about this game. I'll probably go back and play it again. And I was doing the crossplay thing where I started on my PlayStation 3 and then I did the save over to my Vita and, oh, I got a Vita, which is news.
Oh.
courtesy of Drinkbox, actually. As a good job shipping Guacamelee. But I've been loving the Vita version, and I don't know if it fits better, but it you almost can't tell the difference between the two, other than the screen size is obviously smaller. I guess depending on your TV.
Well, I never played the PS3 version. I've only played it on the Vita, but I think it looks amazing on the Vita. Like, I don't know if it's like the smaller screen just, you know, makes it pop or something, but like, because I had played the beta a bit on the PC, and I don't know if it's just like polish or what, but I couldn't believe it looked so much better on the Vita. And
well, the artwork's amazing too, which we haven't mentioned.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I think visually the game's awesome. Like, I love all the little touches. Like, I love when you get like a new move and it does like the crazy flashing thing. Like, I don't know how many people got seizures from that.
The verses before a boss fight.
Yeah, yeah, all those things are awesome.
One quick little question. I don't know, but someone says, one of the characters says, "Please." Is that a Men in Black / Frank reference?
I don't think it's intentionally a Frank reference.
Fuck, I was really hoping it was.
Sorry.
It would have been if it was Flame Face and he was pulling out his gun.
It was kind of like that moment. I thought, like, he's saying, "You're going to come at me." And it was like a pulley. More so a reference to Men in Black than to me. I was hoping.
It would have been you, though. Way more.
Fuck.
So how do you feel about, like, I know when it first came out, a lot of people were writing about how there's all these internet meme jokes in the game and stuff. And there were like articles where people were posting all the stuff. But like, I don't know if there's that many in there, and like, I don't know, do you feel like that's the case, or like, does that bug you that people just talk about that, or
I don't know. I it was a surprise, actually, because in our previous games we've always had memes like spread out throughout the game, but here it was more concentrated, like in the town areas. Like, there's two town areas,
yeah,
that are,
yeah,
and they're just kind of filled with billboards and stuff, and we went a bit crazy with the references and the memes in there. And it also feels like people are kind of getting really sick of memes now. It wasn't really clear to us before shipping that's the case. But yeah, so I don't know. The thing I've been calling it around work is like meme fatigue. People are getting sick of this stuff. Like, it's kind of like people quoting Borat like a year after it comes out. You're just like rolling your eyes when you see it, right?
Yeah, that's true.
But I don't know. We, like, with the meme stuff, we tried to put our own spin on it, like Mexicanized, like...
And it was pretty in the background. I was actually surprised that so many people were picking up on it, because it's not really in your face. It's just there.
And it's not like a universal hate either, because like, the most retweets we get are for these things. So like, people are posting pictures of this stuff all the time. So it's also like getting a really positive reaction from some people. So I don't know.
Keep doing it, man. Fuck them.
Dwyer loves his memes.
I gotta say, I actually really liked the writing of the dialogue. Like, just the sense of humor there is like the kind of stuff that reminds me of like the old LucasArts games. And not enough people have a sense of humor in games. And I'm sure I've said that before at some point, but I think it's true. So,
well, thanks a lot, guys, for your positive words.
It's well deserved.
Absolutely.
No jive.
And number one on PSN in April. So.
Yeah, that was nice.
So what else have you been playing, Frank?
Not a whole lot, like I said. Let's see. Far Cry Blood Dragon, game that it reeks at you, Dwyer.
I've been wanting to download it, but I just know I don't have time to play it
It's a short game. It's only 4 hours.
I'm downloading it.
You're going to love it. You'll love the tutorial.
Do you think it'll be his mind fuck of the month next show?
No. It'll be his fuck of the month. I think he will really like it. And I'm enjoying it too. I'm only 3 hours in, but I love the mystical beasts that you hunt and fight. And
it's kind of a weird idea that they took.
The music is awesome too.
Like it's supposed to be a throwback to like 90s. First-person shooters, right?
I would say it's more throwback to 80s action movies.
Okay. It just seemed weird to me that they're building this on the Far Cry 3 engine, but it almost seemed like it was supposed to be like a Duke Nukem kind of thing.
No, I wouldn't say that.
No?
I'd say it's more just an 80s weird retro skin version of Far Cry.
Okay.
I started playing God of War Ascension, which I was really looking forward to, loving that, having loved that series for so long.
Should I tell my story about getting fucked over buying the that game with the bonus? And
do it.
Well, the GameStop had a sale where you could buy God of War Ascension, and then you got the Saga Collection for free.
GameSpot in the States.
Right. GameStop.
Stop, sorry.
Yeah, because it's EB in Canada, GameStop, only in the U.S. And, of course, I was on the fence about getting this game because I knew I wouldn't have time to play it. But then I saw that and I was I've got to get it. Even though I own all those other games on the Saga Collection, I have to have this. So I order it online. And, of course, you know, it gets shipped here and I get a call from UPS saying, we need to broker this, bring it across the border, charge you for it, blah, blah, blah. I ended up paying like at least $20 to bring it into the country on top of what I had already paid. Then it gets here and it didn't come with the bonus game. And they're like, oh yeah, you were supposed to add that to the cart as well. You didn't add that to the cart. I'm like, no, I thought I got it for free with this game. So then they finally sent me from EB in Canada. They sent me the other game.
Oh, yeah.
Why the hell didn't they send me the other thing from EB in Canada? So pissed off. So anyway, I'm never ordering from GameStop again. It's bullshit.
Preach it.
Continue. I haven't played the game.
I was really liking it, as I do most God of War games, but I was playing on the hardest difficulty to
speed trophy collection a lot.
Yeah. So I didn't have to do multiple playthroughs. And they changed their enemy AI, as far as I can tell, where there used to be like a gang tactic where only one enemy would attack you at a time, and or the delay between group attacks is way less now, and I would just get into situations where I would just get hit after hit after hit. I'm dead within 3 seconds. And I've played all the games. I fancy myself a pretty good God of War player, and I can't believe more people haven't complained about this, and I just got so frustrated I turned it off.
Are people even playing it? That game has sort of just disappeared for me.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't seem like it came out and then just was gone.
For me, it wasn't like I'm sick of God of War. It was specific changes to this game that annoyed the piss out of me. And as Film Junk co-host Jay Chill will tell you, I've been playing a lot of Candy Crush Saga on Facebook.
Nice.
Well, that's a pretty big game right now.
That's getting viral.
Yeah.
So it's just, you know, your typical Bejeweled clone, but pretty much
people like candy and candy boxes.
What is it about this game that keeps you coming back?
It's like,
I don't know anything.
It's
about
like
this
Bejeweled.
See, so there's a Peggle ripoff on Facebook called Hot Shots, and I've pretty much done everything you can do with that. So I was just desperately searching for another Facebook game to play when
I'm
bored.
I think it's Bejeweled with some more puzzle elements.
Yeah, and some...
Okay. So you have to clear... So in Bejeweled, you have your normal, like, let's say, 8x8 grid.
Yeah.
They make it so you have to clear a certain section of that 8x8 grid multiple times, or they kind of, like, they say, challenges. Like, clear this section of the grid.
And you can combine candies with powers. There's more powered candies. It's pretty amazing, but I started playing Pixel Junk Monsters on Facebook,
okay,
and that's pretty good too. But
oh, really?
I found like I got to a point where without spending money, I couldn't do anything, and that's why I play Candy Crush, because I can play it without needing to spend money. That's pretty much the ultimate decider with me for Facebook games.
Don't download Epic.
And we talked briefly about Super Metroid, and that's all I've played.
Awesome. So my list is surprisingly longer than yours, guys, but I also was sort of sidetracked playing games because the birth of my son happened a little earlier.
That's right. Congratulations.
Yeah,
welcome, baby Ethan.
Yeah, so
your gaming life will never be the same.
Actually, it's been probably better, actually, because I've been getting up so early now, and I've had so much time now before work. I'm basically up at like 4:30 every morning, and I basically don't go back to bed at that time. So I'm up until I leave for work at about 8:30. So as long as the baby's sleeping, I'm playing games. So it's actually been better than I thought it was going to be. So I actually played through a few games just briefly. Lara Croft got it, Guardian of the Light. I had a buddy over. We played through some of that. That game's a ton of fun co-op.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then I got into Quantum Conundrum. I was feeling a little Portal. I don't know how far I'm into that, but I was enjoying it. I kind of got stuck on one puzzle, and I haven't really gone back to it. I got Mario Galaxy 2 from the library. I didn't get very far in that, though. That was right around the time he was born, so I kind of just gave it back and wasn't really in. But I was enjoying it.
I've been thinking of popping both galaxies back into the Wii U.
Yeah, it was enjoyable. I didn't hate it, but I wasn't in the mood for it, and just the wrong time to take that out from my library. Then I bought Sleeping Dogs before it went on PS
you
Plus.
Bought it. Oh, no.
Yeah, well, okay, I bought it on cheap Boxing Day for like $30. And then I played it recently, and I love this game. I got addicted to this game. Everyone should go play this, especially now it's on PlayStation Plus for
free. I remember
free.
Watching him play after the last episode of Game Junk. We went downstairs.
Was it the last one?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure, wasn't it?
I think it was the one before.
I don't know.
When did this game come out? Like October
a while ago.
Or something?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe it was. Yeah. And I just remember making fun of the game the whole
time. Yeah, just making fun of it.
It's so good, though. I mean, it's... It's kind of like Grand Theft Auto set in Tokyo, but they pace out the combat, so you don't even get a gun until probably halfway through the game. It's all hand-to-hand combat, and I think just the way they do all the collectibles, I think Graham was talking about collectibles on a map.
Tomb Raider.
Yeah, Tomb Raider. So this game, they don't put them on the map, but as you upgrade certain things, so as you discover things around the world,
Tomb Raider does too, except for a couple types.
Oh, so there's like quests. There's like side quest guys that are shown on the map, and as you do those, they call it gaining face. I don't know what exactly that means, but once you gain more face, more collectibles are shown on the map.
More street cred.
Yeah, more street cred. So I don't know. I love this game. Everyone should play it on PlayStation Plus because it's free. I did trade it in for $15, and then the next week it went free on PlayStation Plus. So I was like, this is perfect.
I guess.
Yeah. I also through PlayStation Plus played Spec Ops: The Line. I realized I love third person action shooter games, which is probably why I love Binary Domain.
ED.
Yeah. And I like Gears of War. So, I mean, this game is great. Everyone was saying the story's awesome. It's pretty good. I wouldn't say it's amazing. It's not like the best story, but it really does. If you want a mindfuck of the month and you're desperate, this could give you a mindfuck of the month. So it's got some twists and turns in it that you might.
Desperate.
You might. So maybe pick this up. I know it was on PlayStation Plus. I think it's still on PlayStation Plus. So download it. Get mindfucked. But you have to play it all the way to the end to get to the good stuff.
That's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, I know.
That's not going to be my mindfuck of the month.
But they do a good job of making you have to make decisions and making you feel bad about it. So it's kind of like, do you save this one person or...
It's kind of like the Walking Dead game?
Yeah, sort of. So they put you in good moral... I mean, I don't think it really has a big impact in the long scheme of the game, but... In that moment, it's very impactful, and they do a good job crafting the situation. Let's see here. Oh, and the other big game I finished was Dishonored, and a Bethesda Works project, I believe, right? I expected to absolutely hate this game, but I actually loved it because it's very similar to BioShock, but the stealth and the sneaking aspects are what I like about it. I don't like the combat particularly. I spent most of my time avoiding combat, which I think is why I liked it so much. I think if I went through this game trying to kill everything, I wouldn't have enjoyed it as much. I really enjoyed trying to sneak around and find all the secrets and look around and I beat it, and I contemplating going back and trying to platinum it, but
I love the art style of the game. Menus and interfaces included.
Yeah, they made a lot of good decisions about the interface that really, and some of the stuff I didn't realize at first, and that was, I was like, oh man, I really wish I could just see where guys were through walls, and I didn't realize that was actually one of the powers you can buy, so probably I would have been a little even less frustrated if I knew that and I bought that ahead of time. But overall, I really like that game. I think people should like it up or pick it up
lick
if they
it
like
lick it up
get
just
lick
like
it
Kiss.
All over if they like stealthy action games. And then the last game I really played was on the Vita. I played FIFA Soccer Demo.
Which one, the original one or the new one?
I don't know. Whichever one's on the demo, PSN. Anyways, a soccer game or football. However,
there's been two versions, right? The one that came out at launch and then the most recent 13 one.
I think it must be the recent one.
Okay.
But I must say, this game made me a believer that FIFA is amazing on the Vita because of the back touchpad. And you can aim all your shots super accurately. That was always my problem with FIFA, is that you'd hold down the shoot button and you're trying to run and aim at the same time, and you could never really... You'd almost all the time shoot it way over the net. Whereas with the touchpad, you actually use the touchpad to aim to the corner you want. So now you could be running right and very easily shoot bottom left corner, shoot whichever corner you want. It made it really easy to aim, which I find is always the problem in soccer and even in hockey. Yeah. Though I think hockey would probably be a little... Hockey's a little easier with the right dangle stick stuff now. But I think the Vita could be a really good platform to play FIFA on next year. And I'll probably look into picking that up. And that's it for me.
All right, I only got a couple other things. on the topic of Metroidvania, I actually picked up Castlevania Lords of Shadow Mirror of Fate, which is probably the longest Castlevania title to date. And I was really psyched for this, and then the reviews came out and were not so good, and I was like,
I better pick it up.
Do I want to pick it up? I don't know. I was like, you know what? I'll give it a chance. And I actually really like the game. I don't know why the reviews were so negative. I mean, I think visually it's not the greatest. I think they should have just stuck to 2D, but it's obviously like a 3D engine, but with 2D gameplay. So, I mean, it doesn't look the best, and there are some moments, particularly with the cutscene, they kind of have like the cel-shaded look. You know, it doesn't look amazing, and there's a few moments where it feels like there's some slowdown happening, but I think actually what it is just the game itself is a little bit slower than, you know, what we're used to with Castlevania games. But like, it actually is an interesting melding of the Lords of Shadow game and the combat in that with like the adventure exploration elements of other Castlevania games. And the weird thing is that there's actually, you play as the three different characters and they each have their own chapter. And I've only made it to, I'd say I'm about 60% of the way through the game. So I've only seen two of the characters and they each have their own powers and moves and whatnot. And I've heard that the second and third characters just kind of get boring and repetitive after a while. So maybe it will get to that for me, but I don't know. I really liked the first half of the game and what I've seen of it so far. So, I mean, if you like the Castlevania games for the DS and whatnot, I would say don't necessarily be scared off by the reviews. But the other stuff I've been playing, I recently downloaded Mario and Donkey Kong Minis on the Move, which is an eShop game for the 3DS. And I like a lot of the other Mario and Donkey Kong games. First two were kind of puzzle platformers. Then they kind of had a few where they did almost like a Lemmings type thing where you have to get these group of Marios across a map. And this one is actually a strange hybrid of... It feels like Nintendo has actually been playing iOS games, believe it or not, because it actually kind of reminds me of Train Yard. And I think there's other games that have kind of used the same idea of like building a track, but you have like sort of an overhead map with like a grid and you have to get your guy from one end to the other. And what happens is there's pieces that drop down kind of like Tetris and you have to drag them onto the grid and piece them together to make them walk the right way. But there's also timing elements to it, and like sometimes you have to put a piece down, let them walk over it, and then erase that piece and put something else there because he's coming back around again. So like, it starts off really simple, but then very quickly you can see how there's a lot of interesting and clever puzzles they can make with this thing. And I guess there's like a bunch of different modes and mini games. I haven't really looked at any of the other stuff, but the main gameplay mode I thought was actually pretty cool. So, and the other thing is, I don't know how many Nintendo games have done this before, but in terms of looking like an iOS game, it's got that same format of like, you've got, you know, 10 different levels, and then it has like how many stars you've got on that level. Like it feels like an iOS game. So it's weird. Like, as much as people have been kind of pushing and saying Nintendo should start putting out their games on iOS, and I don't think they will, but they're clearly paying attention to it because a lot of those games are in their wheelhouse, I think.
The merger I would want most in the world, Apple and Nintendo.
There you go. Maybe one day. You never know. So the last thing I'll mention, and I will make this my mind fuck of the month, although it's not really a literal mind fuck. It's kind of a theoretical mind fuck, if you will.
Ooh. It's a finger mind fuck.
It's a game called DLC Quest. Has anybody heard of this?
I've heard of this game.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
It's like a little indie game that's available on Steam. I think it's like $2 to buy or something, but it's kind of a joke parody game, but it's actually still kind of fun to play. The idea is that everything in the game is kind of DLC. So you start playing this, it's like a platformer, 2D platform. You start playing it and it's like you can't jump. There's no music. You're like, what the fuck's going on? But you can collect a few coins and then you get to somewhere and it's like, okay, now you can buy the jump ability with this many coins. So now you can jump. And like, you keep progressing through the game like that, and everything is like a DLC pack that you're buying. So it's kind of a clever, you know, take on where games are at right now. And it's pretty short. It's like, you know, I'd say definitely under an hour to play through the whole thing. But I had fun with it. So
has anyone played that Surgeon Simulator?
No.
I've seen it.
Some guys in Pixel Knots were playing it. It's ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
Is that an Adult Swim game? Or
I don't know. It's just
They have some sort
like
of surgeon game.
It's like a crazy quap. Is that what it was called? Quap?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
a crazy quap game.
Crazy quap
like
game?
The,
you, the quap runner?
Yeah, remember how you would quap run?
The runner game?
I don't know what you guys just, are talking
just do
about.
There's quap. A weird...
Yeah. Q-W-O-P?
You've yeah. never quapped?
Q-W-O-P?
Yeah. Yeah, just Google that. You'll find it.
You got a quap.
This is...
You got a quap.
Dwight guy is a quapper.
And he's going to spend all night playing this game.
No,
this
no.
will be you his mind fucking the month.
Top one.
Next
that's
month.
The actual game, I think.
This one?
Yeah.
I can't believe you never played this.
But
this
like
is the, revolutionary.
The mouse simulates.
I wish the audience could see this right now.
This is great. Live demo of co-op.
Okay, so Q-W-O-P.
Someone describe what's happening here.
There's a there's a runner on screen, and
I don't know.
You use the QWOP keys to try to control his legs through physics simulation, and you have to.
You're contracting and releasing the muscles.
Yeah, you have to mimic a run to see how far you can get on the.
Wow, it's a pretty good quapper.
That might be a natural born quapper.
So all right, that's it for what I played this month or last couple months. So let's get on to the junk mail and let's make this snappy here,
yeah,
boys.
Let's do it.
So
it's bedtime.
We got one from Steve who says, "Hey guys, I have a question that's been boggling my brain lately. I've Googled around and I can't seem to find a satisfying answer, and I figured since you're all pretty well versed in the tech side that you'd be able to break this down for me. How is online gaming possible?"
Flux pretty, capacity.
Pretty huge question. "I understand the basics of clients versus servers, but how is it possible to be in an environment where split-second decisions can be accurately reflected in real time? For example, shooters like Halo or Call of Duty rely a lot on reflexes. Blah, blah, blah. Also, I'd like to hear Frank's basic system for organizing his game collection. Do manifesto rules apply? Thanks, Steve."
You want to tackle the manifesto first?
I guess. It's pretty much the same as a manifesto. System within a system, alphabetical. The one gray area that sometimes I flirt with is organizing my PS3 stuff based on whether it's, you know, how they change their branding, whether I should put all the original branding stuff separate from the late branding stuff.
I can
tough
see.
Call.
That's a bigger quandary than any manifesto question.
All right, so who wants to explain network gaming?
I can.
I guess like the. I mean, I'm trying to think of how a simple answer might explain it.
I'll say you fake it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You have your own version of the world running on your system, and you're trying to transmit as little data as possible so that it's as fast as possible to keep those environments in sync.
Yeah. And then, so basically, the server somewhat would basically tell you if you're correct or not at a certain point in time. So your local copy is simulating what it thinks should happen, and then every once in a while, the server tells it what it's actually supposed to be doing. And if there's a difference, it'll change yours to look correct. So there's like a little lag in there. So that's where you'll sometimes see games that don't do it properly will have problems with, you know, headshots or, you know, like the lag where you shoot and then it misses a guy, although you're confident the bullet went right through somebody. And that's because on your local copy, it did go right through that guy, but on the server, it didn't. So there's like a lag there. Most likely on the server, the guy was like 1 foot to the left or right, and on yours, he wasn't. So most of it's just faked. And you just, like Frank said, you just try to send as little data as possible and try to get as best responses as you can. I don't know if Graham, do you want to add anything to that? It's pretty complicated. Finding those windows are pretty tough.
Yeah, it's. I think like the client server one is the most common way of doing things. There's another way you can do it where everyone is doing the simulation in parallel and just sending their inputs to each other. But that only works if the simulations can be done perfect on each machine, which is not an easy thing to do for games. But because every time,
especially when there's physics and stuff involved, then
is there any that do that, but almost there's a central system that almost takes the averages of people's Simulations?
There's some like hybrid approaches as well. But the last game I worked on was doing this. It's called Lockstep. So everyone steps their simulation, sends their inputs to everyone else. And then when you receive everyone else's input, you step the simulation again. And every time the game needs a random number for something, for like a particle effect or something, it has to be the same random number on every machine. So all that stuff has to be kept in sync. If as soon as one thing goes out of sync, it's like the game is over. So, yeah.
Now, I don't know if this is still how things work for some games, but I know with like Halo and some of these other games, it used to be like if you were playing with a bunch of people, one person would be chosen as the server, right?
Yeah.
And the thing is, that person would then have an advantage because they
have zero ping time.
Exactly. Yeah. But and people could find out if they were the server or not, and then exploit that, I guess.
Some people would quit out and restart a new game just until they became the server and stuff like that.
Right. So does that still happen, or have they found a way to fix that?
I think it's still pretty common that happens in most multiplayer games. Yeah. There's sometimes the host is off-site, so it's the same for everybody. Like if you're playing a game like WoW, for example, nobody's hosting that game. I think some of the Call of Duty stuff, I'm not sure actually.
Does EA still have their own servers that they use for stuff?
I'm pretty sure they do, yeah.
They're brutal.
They are.
Yeah.
And they need to get better. Like, I've played so many NHL games where guys drop out when I'm up 3-0.
Bastards.
And it, like, they just need better systems for that, for giving me something.
I think, well, I won't get into it. Never mind.
Okay.
All right. So Mitch says, hello again, Game Junk. I have a serious gaming dilemma. I was born in 1992, and my first console was PlayStation 1. Since then, I've stuck with PlayStation and have had both Xboxes, but I've never had a Nintendo console. When I listen to your show or talk to friends, it seems like I'm the only person with essentially zero Nintendo experience. Where should I go from here? Is it too late, and should I just forget about it? Should I look around for an N64 or something older? Thanks, Mitch.
I think you'd have pretty good luck just going to a used game store, pick up an SNES and a bunch of cartridges. And
I got an even better selection. Get a Wii or Wii U and just do virtual console. Because almost all the games you'll want to play.
Or do ROMs. Get an Ouya and ROM.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or get one of those stupid 3-in-1 consoles.
Yeah.
And buy stuff from flea markets.
But I mean, just like think of this guy's situation. Like, he has never played a Mario Brothers game. Like,
yeah.
Just go out and buy every Mario game.
If you buy a Wii, right, you could get the Mario Anniversary Collection.
Cheap now,
go
right?
through them all. I would suggest going through
that
all the Marios.
That would be an amazing suggestion right there.
And what
Wii's
else?
Wii's are what, $130 maybe?
You can get a Wii Mini for $89.99.
Yeah. Do it.
I wouldn't. I don't think you can do virtual console with that. So don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. Then.
Okay, don't do that. Yeah, because it doesn't have Wi-Fi, right?
Buy a Wii U. Like, why wait?
Yeah, it depends what he wants.
The virtual console is not that great on Wii U yet.
Actually, I would say one other thing. If you find a used Wii somewhere, you can play GameCube games on that as well.
Yeah.
Which you can't on the Wii U.
And you can't download those.
Yeah.
So, might be something to consider.
Yet.
Okay, so Philip writes, so I recently played Guacamelee, and I wanted to know how and who chose the trophies for this game. Do a certain amount of people on the dev team have to be able to get them? Philip.
Reading between the lines, I think he's maybe having some trouble with it.
Yeah, I think that's what he's saying.
Which like, I thought they were pretty good. I
thought they were reasonable.
The only one I have left to get that I know like is going to be a challenge is
that six attack one, yeah.
But now that I have a little tip.
Yeah. I think Guacamelee is probably one of the easier games to platinum if you compare it with other games. And definitely everyone on the team near the end of the project was playing through the game and making sure all the trophies were attainable. And like personally, I played through it several times and made sure that everything was obtainable. And trying to tune the difficulty of them to be reasonable and obtainable for most gamers, but not tuning it down so easy so that like anyone can just go in and get these trophies. So
I guess, was there anyone at work that couldn't get the platinum that was kind of a joke at the office?
there's people who didn't even try to get the platinum, a couple of people, maybe people who do less gaming, but for the most part, most of the team definitely played the game and were able to platinum it. But we play the game every day, so like we're
Seasoned vets.
Yeah, definitely seasoned vets. But we also had people come in to playtest the game and made sure that everything was pretty reasonable, too. So.
Okay. Okay, we got a couple questions from Blake. So, first one, guys, I've noticed that some game developers have moved away from static HUD elements remaining on screen, allowing for context-sensitive implementations, see Tomb Raider and Dead Space. I, for one, disable all HUD elements on games if the option is available to allow for a more cinematic experience. As much as I enjoyed Bioshock Infinite, I would have appreciated the ability to turn off HUD elements such as crosshairs, life, and salt bars, etc., and also holster my weapon, but that's a whole other topic. How do you feel about HUD elements? Intrusively obtuse or essentially pragmatic? Cheers from Boston. P.S. Late title cards are awesome. My most memorable one being that of Metal Gear Solid appearing in the Ascension up the elevator. What are your favorite instances of this?
Well, I would say most Metal Gears are a good example. I tried thinking on the way up. I struggled.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of any. I Googled late title cards.
Okay.
And a lot of people said Red Dead.
Which, at the end of the game?
No, at the beginning too. But also.
That's a good call.
Yeah.
And Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, I think, came up. Or Assassin's Creed 2, one of those. I can't remember which one. But I'm
sure there's
too.
Ones that I'm.
What about Heavy Rain? I seem to remember that having an interesting title reveal, but I could be wrong.
Maybe.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. Could be.
So we. But don't know.
Yeah, weak answer on that one.
So HUD stuff, what do you guys think?
I have a soft spot, having worked on user interfaces. I like the some of the ingenuity that goes into those. I like both approaches, in-game or your 2D cool artwork interfaces. I don't know. I like interfaces. I'm not one to turn them off.
I think UI is tough to do. Because if you put too much on screen, it clutters everything. And if you don't put enough, you're not portraying enough information. So you really need to like work hard to strike the balance. And that's how I mean, from a creating games perspective and also from a playing games perspective, I kind of feel the same way, where if the game strikes the right balance, it's fine. I haven't played Tomb Raider yet, but like I liked Dead Space a lot, which had nothing except the stuff on his back, really. And when you pulled up the menu, it was kind of in the world, which I thought was really cool. But yeah, you got to make sure you can portray enough information to the player. I think like in Bioshock, if I had the crosshairs turned off, I'd probably miss every time. So I don't know if that's really a UI switch for me, but I can see why you'd like that, but
I think it does have aim assist though.
Sure.
Which could help.
Sure.
Graham?
Yeah, I like when games are able to do it well, and Dead Space is a really good example of that, but it's not always easy to do that. Like Dead Space is well suited because, well, if you want to show health on your character, the way Dead Space does it is pretty good, but you can't do that same thing on many other games. So
yeah,
it's like a tricky thing. Like,
Laura Croft can't carry around her spacesuit with her.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, if you can do it well, I think minimalist is the way I prefer anyway.
Yeah, I just, like, I don't really have a problem with HUD stuff. I just, like, if the argument is to make a more cinematic experience, you know, for cutscenes, they usually turn all that stuff off anyway. So that's fine. Like, when I'm actually playing the game, I want to play the game. So whatever's going to help me play the game, I want it there.
Well, thinking of the classic franchise, we talked about Mario.
Yeah.
There's hardly any HUD stuff on Mario, too.
Really? I don't know about that.
Maybe there is. Yeah.
How many men you have left, how many coins you have, how much time you have left.
To get it. Actually,
the newer Mario games, they figure that stuff out. When you take a hit, it comes back in. So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I was thinking a bit more Mario 64 and stuff like that. Right. But
didn't they just have the health thing above your head when you got hit?
Something like that.
The health circle pie
but
thing?
Let's use another example for a bit of counterpoint here. I'm not the biggest WoW player in the world, but when I play WoW, I just marvel at how good-looking their interface is and all their different menu bars and the fidelity and the high-resness. Like, their presentation is phenomenal.
Yep.
I haven't played WoW, but remember when we played, oh no, well, we all played, but DC Universe Online and, what was the other? I played a little bit of the Star Wars Old Republic game. That is just like information overload. I'm sure it's all needed, but I have no idea what's going on.
I think WoW does
that
stuff really, really well.
Yeah. And you don't realize until you play those other games and you realize.
Pretty schlick.
Yeah. Blizzard's really good at that stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, his other question. Actually, I guess it's kind of his third question.
Fuck,
dearest infrequent podcasters, as the average age of the typical gamer are skewing more and more towards their 20s and 30s, seeing that game release patterns are relying less on Q4 holiday dependence and that publishers appear to be pacing out their games more evenly throughout the calendar year. Now, I, as an officially grown-ass man, can typically buy things when I want them, juxtaposed to waiting for Christmas for my 2 to 3 Nintendo 64 games I had been salivating over for months. That said, I do tend to play less games in the summer due to the weather and keeping my sexy bikini weather body in mediocre shape. Thus leads me to my question. Do you think publishers are acknowledging less dependence on the young gamer when planning out their release calendar? I.e. just look at The Last of Us getting a June release date. Or are we to suspect that, much akin to the Q1 equivalent for movies, there is a dumping ground for games not expected to succeed? Cheers, Blake.
I talked about this on one of our first episodes, too. And Nintendo's the king of this. They'll release games, and I think it kind of plays into the age market, but I think it's something else. I think the longevity of coolness for younger kids is longer, and maybe not so much today as it used to be, but things are cooler longer for kids, and we know about stuff right away. I think kids, their friends play games, and they still want them, and they'll ask for them for Christmas. So having an amazing game that builds up a reputation between the months of March to July, I still think is going to lead to the good sales during that time period and also awesome sales around Christmas, especially if kids are getting a system for a first time. They'll ask for the games that they know are good, and parents will kind of be known what games are good, and they know what to get, especially if they're at a retail store. They ask, what are the good games? They're already there. They're known which games are good, and they'll probably recommend those. So I think it's just a good game that's released. If a company knows a game is good, I think they'll tend to release it earlier so that there's more word of mouth, and it'll just increase sales on top of the fact that you're not in a cluttered holiday market at the same time.
I don't know. I think there's still a huge focus on the holiday release thing. I think this year we saw a lot of stuff early in the year, but it's only because they all got delayed. So I think that's what's happening more and more.
I don't think so. Not with PS3, because they started their March releases a long time ago with God of War and Killzone were all March releases, and all the big Wii games were April and May releases.
Those are all mature games, though.
Well, not the Wii ones that I'm talking about, like Mario Galaxy. Yeah. And so I think, again, Sony recognizing good ideas and copying them, that's another example of that. Nintendo had their biggest and best games earlier rather than later in the year, and Sony recognized that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's happening more often that people are spacing them out, but I think it's really, like, it's not guaranteed blockbusters where they're looking to sort of distance themselves from the pack, and it can work out well. I think with Dead Space, I don't remember if the first one came out in February, but I know the second and third one did, and I assume it's just because, well, if one did well in that at that time period, then we'll just keep continuing with that. But
I think there's also some huge games that release in the fall or in the holiday season. So I think it comes down to, do you want to sell none or go somewhere where you might get more sales, right? So
yeah,
it comes to, do you want to release a shooter against Call of Duty? Probably not. So you probably want to put that shooter somewhere else in the release schedule. And I think publishers are very aware of that. So if you're publishing a shooter, you're not going to put it in the same time as COD.
Yeah, that's the same as us, like, as a small developer. We're, like, definitely avoiding holidays when we're thinking about releasing our games.
Yeah, and I think something like The Last of Us, I suspect that this year is kind of an anomaly, too, because I think people are afraid to come out when the new consoles are coming out, because if you're an old a game on the last generation and then the new generation's coming out, you're going to get kind of left in the dust, potentially.
I wonder if also the quality bar is raising so high that it's more worthwhile for publishers to get just put another 4 to 5 months of work into a game rather than push it out early just to meet that holiday window, which is maybe why we saw like such a rush of games in March.
I think that's definitely the case because people know that like reviews matter for games, right? Like it's not like movies where you can get shit reviews and still make tons of money. Like reviews are everything. So if you know the game's not going to be as good as it could be, then you better delay it. There's no other option, really. Okay, a few more questions. So we got one from Steven who says, I know it's old news. What do you guys think of Disney giving EA the rights to make Star Wars games? Will EA making Star Wars games ensure that new games are massive AAA titles? Do you think Star Wars 1313 will get released? What kind of Star Wars games do you hope they make? What is your dream Star Wars game? I hope they make Star Wars Battlefront 3. And lastly, did any of you play Star Wars Episode 1 Racer for the N64?
Is that Pod Racer?
Yeah.
I think so. It's one of the few racing games I've ever really gotten into, and apparently it got mediocre reviews, but I love that shit. Thanks. Hopefully you do another episode right after E3. Steven.
We talked a bit about the Star Wars stuff, but dream Star Wars game? I know at one point in my life, I think before Dark Forces came out, I wanted a first-person Star Wars game would have been the ultimate.
I want a TIE Fighter remake.
Yeah, I'm on board with that. Next-gen TIE Fighter.
I think there's a lot of great old Star Wars franchises that they could bring back out and people would go nuts. Like, I think that's a great idea. I think Jedi Knight, do another one of those games.
Frank mentioned Rebel Assault earlier, too. That would be pretty good.
FMV coming back.
Trying to think. There were a few other pretty good Star Wars games from the past. I mean, obviously...
The Super Nintendo ones are good.
Oh, I love those.
Yeah, that's true.
Yep.
Okay.
Is there anything else in that question? There's a lot of questions.
I played Star Wars Podracer. I played it on PC, though, a lot of it. And it was a good game.
Yeah.
It's a good racing game, yeah.
I think I remember enjoying it, too, although I don't have any specific memories of it.
I bought it a while off eBay for Dreamcast. Haven't played it yet.
On the topic of Battlefront, I actually really liked the first two Battlefront games. And, you know, I'm not the biggest Battlefield player or any of those kinds of games. I actually played single-player scenarios with bots quite a bit and found it to be a lot of fun. So
I had mentioned Masters of Terra Sky or whatever the hell it's called, the 2D fighter.
Right.
Maybe a Smash Brothers Star Wars game.
Could be interesting.
It might even exist. If it did, it's a piece of shit. So make it good.
And I don't think 1313 will come out. It may come out under a different name, but I think that name is dead.
Okay.
But I can see them making a game similar to that, since it got such good, you know, press and everything.
A Star Wars Uncharted, basically, is all you need to say.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, a couple more questions. Matthew says, having got to the end of Bioshock Infinite and enjoying said ending, though slightly puzzled, what's your favorite ending to a video game? Cheers, boys.
We'd drop that bomb on us. No prep.
I think my favorite ending is Ico. I don't know if you guys remember that.
I've never played Ico, actually.
I beat it. I don't remember the ending.
There was an ending, and then there was a credit sequence. It was a kind of like a sad, melancholic ending. And then there was a credit sequence, and then there was like an epilogue that I was completely unexpected and completely changed my perspective on the game. But yeah, it was just because it was kind of surprising and unexpected. It was really cool.
Well, I don't really see the endings of games, so actually one that I would
Super Metroid.
One that I think is an awesome ending, although I haven't actually played the game from start to finish, is the original Metroid with the reveal of Samus taking off the suit.
Yeah, or Super Metroid. That's the one I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Ocarina of Time, the boss battle in that. I thought that was
Which one's that?
Ganon monster, and
don't you have to like fight mirror image of yourself or something, or is that before that?
I think it's before that.
Oh, okay.
But I would agree, Bioshock Infinite is up there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Interesting. All right, Austin from San Antonio says, I feel like I'm always asking questions on here, but I'll try to keep it short. I kept seeing comments with people complaining over the Xbox One not being backwards compatible. For me, it's simple. Just keep the system. What are your thoughts on this? Second, during the conference, I keep hearing about this or that engine, and I'm in no way a game developer. And this might be a stupid question, but what are some game engines you guys have worked with or like to have worked with, and what... And are there games actually out there that sell you just on the engine? Thanks again for the podcast. Austin from San Antonio.
Oh, yeah. Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater. Awesome ending. I would say no. I would never play a game just because of the engine.
Yeah,
that would be my first.
Agree.
Unless it was something like I knew it was Unreal and I knew they were trying to make an open world game with it. Then I would know it would probably be in trouble. Cause, and I've worked with Unreal. I think all of us have worked with Unreal.
Me a little bit.
I've worked with Unity.
I as well have worked with Unity.
I think that's probably all the engines I've worked with. I never worked with Gamebryo, although I've heard horror stories of working with Gamebryo. I don't know. And everything else has been sort of in-house engines.
Yeah.
Yeah, mostly in-house stuff for me, too. But I don't know. I mean, to me, it's not like usually if people talk about the engine as a big deal, it's just because the graphics look amazing. And for me, graphics are usually not the biggest selling point anyway. So, yeah, it's not that big of a deal to me. Backwards compatibility.
I think that's just assumed now that that's not going to happen since Sony has been pulling out the backwards compatibility of the PS3. So I don't know if anyone should have been really expecting it in the current one.
It was just a software fix for the old Xbox. Like it's not surprising.
I mean, I will agree with what Graham said before, though, that it's a little weird that downloadable titles won't
that
still be playable.
Is weird.
Yeah, it's because it's a different architecture, right? So you'd have to rebuild it for the other architecture, and they don't have software support to emulate it. So
yeah, like normally I would say backwards compatibility doesn't matter because you can just, you know, usually digitally download these old games, but I guess that may not be possible. So ultimately, I don't think it matters that much, but it's always one of those, you know, when people are making the jump to the next console, they're scared to do it. So
I'm wondering if there's ever going to be a market for, you know, if you have a system that has like 200 digital titles that aren't available anymore, if like that'll be worth
a lot. Preloaded the hard drive?
Yeah, like, well, not just that. Like, let's say you bought every, like, 50% of Xbox Live Arcade games when they were out. They're on your system. Like, and no one has any way of getting at those games anymore. Will that be worth money? If there's certain games that never come out any other way except for that one time on Xbox Live Arcade, how much will that be worth?
Nothing.
I would say it's probably worth something. I don't know how much it will be worth, but
trust me.
Frank would buy that shit.
It's all in the ether, man. It's not physical.
Another amazing video game ending, which we had kind of already talked about, is Red Dead Redemption.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That one was real good.
That was really cool.
They did a good job on that.
Okay, so Michael says, we've heard a lot from consumers and gamers how they feel about Xbox One, but how do developers feel about it? Do some of the features sound useful for developing games from indie to big budget? Love to hear your thoughts. Can't wait for the show. Michael.
Did they even talk about anything?
Yeah.
I would say nothing, really. But I would say, if anything, the trend seems to be using an engine that makes things easy to port to multiple platforms. So I think that's where most developers are going, aligning with engines that will make multi-platform versions very easy.
Yeah, that's the only thing. The architectures seem similar. Or at least, you know, they both have 8 cores. They both use the same amount of RAM, roughly, depending on the details of that. But overall, it's not like Cell versus whatever the Xbox had. I can't remember what they had there.
I guess the one thing that could be interesting, I mean, I'm not sold on it yet. I don't even own one yet, is the Kinect. Like, if there's some, I just feel like there's possibilities there. Nobody's really done much with it, and I don't know if part of it is that the original Kinect isn't
the new Kinect looked pretty detailed.
I don't know. The only thing that's really interesting to me is that those demo videos of a Luma Room. That to me,
That's pretty amazing. Cool. Yeah.
Who knows how far away we are from that? It doesn't seem that hard, though. It's.
I think for the new Kinect stuff, I think the first thing you're going to see is ports of old Kinect games with like upgraded sensor ability.
It's like Wii Motion Plus.
It's exactly except it'll be an HD in quote release of the game, brand new $60 title. Kinect version 2.
I'd buy that Star Wars Kinect HD version. For sure.
Well, I was thinking, I think I mentioned it last time with that Steel Battalion game that like had terrible control issues because the Kinect just couldn't pick up fine motor things. I think that'd probably be perfect candidate for a redo.
All right. So last but not least, question for Frank. Why haven't you been on Miiverse for 6 months? Jason.
I think I finally went back on last week. And? I don't know. I got back on because they released a patch that is supposedly going to make switching between apps and stuff from the home menu faster, which was my biggest complaint about the Wii U. And I have only played with it for a couple of minutes, so we'll see if I return, if that improves the experience for me. But overall, I don't know, Miiverse not blowing me away so far, to be honest.
Wow.
I thought the promise of games like Mario Brothers that did a lot of in-game Miiverse interaction, and actually Nintendo Land does it well, of bring up random stuff when you complete things. That to me is way more interesting than just going into the Miiverse and going into a Nintendo version of forums.
Does it show you what's trending? Apparently that's the new big thing.
Not really. They have their own like hotspots in the plaza, but the in-game stuff is way more fluid and interesting to me.
All right, well, I guess that's it for junk mail. Questions and comments can be sent to the filmjunk@gmail.com address. And it's going to bring us to the end of the show. Usually we run down some upcoming releases, but I don't really have too much here. Donkey Kong Country for 3DS this weekend. And then The Last of Us, June 14th. Splinter Cell Blacklist in August. Anything else this summer that you guys are looking forward to? That's
I don't know.
I have no idea. Yeah.
Okay. So
we never mentioned Luigi's Mansion either.
What did you play?
Anyone else play Luigi's Mansion?
I did play Luigi's Mansion.
I only played for like 20 minutes.
Yeah. I got to a soft lock and
yeah. Oh no.
Whoa.
Ouch. Luigi's Mansion.
Okay. So. I don't know when we'll be recording again next. I know E3 is coming up soon. You know, we might do an E3 episode, but
odds are probably not good.
Yeah, but I guess next game that we all are interested in might be The Last of Us.
Maybe a little bit. Holy. It's supposed to be amazing, too.
Yeah?
Oh, well, yeah.
Interesting.
Well, it is by Naughty Dog, so.
No, but even preliminary stuff is incredible.
Wow. I don't know, though. Zombies. You might be burned out on zombies.
I'm pretty sure there's a twist that takes it to another level.
Okay. So, Graham, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. It's a pleasure.
So, can people follow you on Twitter and other places like that?
Sure. Graham_Drinkbox is my Twitter name.
Okay.
Or you can follow Drinkbox Studios also on Twitter. That's mostly me.
Okay. And I guess drinkboxstudios.com?
Yeah, drinkboxstudios.com, guacamole.com.
Okay, cool.
Buy guacamole.
Go out and buy it. And I guess don't go out and buy it. Just download it. And you can follow us all on Twitter, twitter.com/dirtyfrank with 3 R's and dirty. My angry commute. How angry has that commute been lately?
It's been all right, actually. I'm driving it now.
Yeah,
it's not too bad.
I got
the system figured out, I think.
And
so.
I'm just going to give another mention to Lost Orbit. Like it on Facebook. Find it.
Okay. And twitter.com/filmjunk for me. So that's about it. GameJunkPodcast.com. And most of our stuff is posted on Facebook.com/GameJunk. So. That's where all the news goes, so hang out there and let us know what you think. And that's about it. So until next time, we'll see you guys later. Bye-bye.
See you.
After you've gone and left me crying, after you've gone.
games.
Game men.